Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Pengler coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Okay, so Jen and I have been talking for the last, you know, week since she's been here last. So we're just going to kind of pick up the conversation. The difference is all you other folks can listen in too. So let's give her a round of applause. And let's bring back Jen Clark from Australia. G'day. How's it going?
G'day, mate. Going pretty good, thank you. How about over there?
Oh, it's well. Listen, we've got all the same problems. We've got Brandon is barricading himself in the White House and the Capitol building. They're actually preventing Americans from going to the Capitol. So Fort Washington D.C. is now being erected, and they're trying to keep Americans out while letting millions of illegals in at the southern border, which is no longer there. So we've actually moved the southern border to the Capitol building of Washington D.C. And I have friends, actually Cindy Cagle, who does the Medical Freedom Report Thursdays. She and her husband are in a camper. They're going to be going there. So we're going to have on the spot, on the street, live reports from D.C., just like we had from January 6th when Jonathan was there and Josie, our Latino reporter, was there also. And so we're in crazy times. You know, it's the best of times, it's the worst times. Dickens was right. You know, we got
democracy's disappointment.
Yeah, let's go, Brandon. Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know if you heard our show yesterday. We had a couple of drag races on. We have a husband and wife team, Matt and Cindy Ann Scott. And apparently at the Daytona 500, which is a huge NASCAR race, apparently it wasn't Let's Go, Brandon. It was the real one, the FU Biden chant. And they were doing this for like a long time. So you can imagine 150, 200,000 spectators, you know, in the middle of the field and campers and all around the echo must have been deafening. We're still waiting for the video. But this is what happened. And so universally, people are basically saying to all the governments, okay, we tried playing nice. You know, we went along with you this far. But okay, COVID left. Did I ever send you that CDC chart proving that COVID was basically gone by July of 2020? Did I ever send you that one? If not, I will.
You go. I haven't personally seen it, but it's no surprise that it exists.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to overload you. See, I have a tendency to overload everybody because I have all this stuff in my head all the time. Here, look at this. Now, this is good, too. No, come on, you got to get the whole picture. Take this, too. And, of course, Jen, being a normal person compared to me, says, "What? Are you insane? Greg, stop." So this is what happens. Okay. So
I never said that.
Well, I know I'm exaggerating because I'm having fun and it makes a better story. Anyway,
for dramatic effect and impact.
Well, it's a radio show. I'm a radio host. You know, what am I going to do? You know, I have to have fun with this too, and that's the thing. My poor fellow advocates who are new at this, they don't realize this is a sport. This is a game, and if you don't keep your perspective, you're going to go insane. You really will, because the forces of evil. Where's Yoda? Where we need Yoda? The Force should be strong with us today. Going to be Jedi, we are. So you gotta call on Yoda and get the Force with you. Yeah, thank you. All seriousness aside,
Force be with you.
May the Force be with you too, Jedi Jen. Sounds good, it does.
Oh my God.
I used to be a tour guide, so I did accents and impressions and things just for fun. So yeah, I'm taking all that worldly talent. In fact, I told my tour guide guests, I said, "Look, I'm going to be a talk show host one day. You'll be able to hear me, and you'll be able to say I was on your tour." So I'm just waiting for one of my tour customers to call in someday. That's going
to
be fun.
Cool.
All right. Yeah. Hope
we'll never lose that sense of play, because the world's really quite a messed up place, and to have a sense of humor amongst it all is a virtue and a blessing.
Well, we do. We will keep our perspective. Anyway, so give a little, if you want to give a little background where we are now, Bill of Rights, I wrote something, sent it to you. Other things are going on in play, as much as you want to say or not say, because this is your strategy. Kind of give us an update. And I'm curious, of course, what you think of the draft that I sent you. So wherever you want to start is fine with me.
Okay.
Or just give me questions.
All sorts of other forces in play. Do you mean what we've sort of unraveled? So, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, or you can just ask me questions too, because just to let folks know, one of the things that we're talking about, the problem that I'm finding in Australia, it's actually worse, you know, than it is in the United States. That's what a right exactly is. And the UN Charter on Universal Rights says, or Universal Human Rights, has totally redefined and screwed up the definition. They've taken this is something that we were asking about actually earlier. They've taken our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and they sort of give the impression that they're sort of maintaining these rights for everybody, making our we the people American constitutional rights into human rights for everyone. And that totally destroys what a right is, because now it's a group right. Now everybody has the same right, and that's simply that defies the idea of having rights of a sovereign people in a sovereign nation. You can't do that. Because then everybody has say of what your rights are. And that's why rights have to be defined by nation, by sovereignty, by nationality. Otherwise, they're not rights at all. If rights are for everybody, they're for nobody. You know. And so that's one of the biggest things. Every time you hear human rights, well, human rights, yeah, humans have a right. You know, what is a human right? What, to life? Yeah, sure. But do you have a right to somebody else's stuff? You know, does somebody in Bangladesh have a right to all your stuff simply because those are human rights? Well, no. Yeah, you know, that's a whole different issue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but I want to. If you want to get, we can start there too. Jen and I, we don't rehearse these things in advance, as you can tell. These are really free flowing discussions. And of course, anybody's welcome to join us 215-383-3832 or worldwide on Skype. I don't know how far you got in it, because you know when I write is I really condense and pack a lot into as few words as I possibly can. So you got a preamble and you got a bunch of rights, which are 1/3 I wrote. 1/3 from your 2019 declaration and 1/3 from our own Bill of Rights from 1787, I think it is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, so look, I think I don't really know what I think, except that I think it's awesome that we've come this far, because when you think about it, and I did mention this to you, you know, just in writing, mm-hmm. you know, over Messenger, you know, what we've taken on here is massive. This is huge. Mm-hmm. To mm-hmm. actually be proposing Bill of Rights for the people by the people of Australia mm-hmm. and potentially lobbying to get that not only into law but integrated into our Constitution,
mm-hmm.
that's a massive outcome mm-hmm. and achievement. And to even be brave enough to take that on, you know, is commendable.
Thank you.
What I think.
But that's created Action
As
Radio.
To the deep.
That's why. That's exactly right. Why I created this whole thing. This convergence of technology, internet radio, and a citizen bill writing website to do exactly what you said: bravely, fearlessly, courageously, full speed ahead, no reservations. We believe this is what the right thing to do is. And then between the people and the government and the consensus and how it works out is how it works out. We don't know the outcome. All we can do is set the thing in motion. And so, yeah. So, but the effort's worth it. I love what we're doing. I absolutely love what we're doing. Go ahead.
Me too. And to think that however far along the timeline for this we get is all an achievement, really. Mm-hmm. And to understand some of the specifics, you know, some of the words, terms and I guess meanings that I may not have come across before and have sparked things in my mind, like, you know, what does that mean? And even one of the things that you just mentioned before where you said if an individual right becomes everybody's right, then it's nobody's right. You didn't say those exact words, but that was...
No, you got
it. I'd like to understand that a little bit more, because are you saying that you can't have individual rights that apply to everyone?
No. No, what I'm saying
is
that
when... I think I know what you're saying, but let's clarify.
What I'm saying is that individual rights have to be expressed individually. They exist in their exercise individually. They have to be stated on documents, on bills of rights individually. And the government has nothing to do with them. So what I found, Jen sent me a video, which is fascinating, illuminating, and disgusting all at the same time, with the idiocy, the pomposity, the arrogance. You know, I even rediscovered the word rubbish, which happens in years and years, by the way. It's total rubbish. I think there's a stronger word, bullocks, which I believe is a British term. So you've got to translate for me into Australian and British English. So
oh, you have in to get Australian, my... it's bullshit.
Okay, well, there you go. It's the same thing here. Although I try and avoid those certain words just because
you're
we
being
are
polite.
somewhat of a family show. Well, we're not regulated by the FCC, so you're not prohibited, but just me. I try not to swear because there's so many other really cool words out there. That's okay. But you're right. It is bullshit. Okay, there I said it. there we go. But the truth is, yeah.
It got my blood boiling watching it, but maybe explain it a bit.
Okay. Well,
go ahead.
What I found is that these people are co-opting the idea of rights and making them a grant of government as opposed to a total separation from government. Go ahead.
I just go back a step before you break it down for everybody? This is a video of a book launch of a book that was written to say, don't leave us with a bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are people that are against the idea. I think it's just important context so people know where we're going with that. So
no, that's fine. Yeah,
please continue.
And please clarify every time you think we should. I do the same thing with folks that have acronyms and things that they know. And anyway, so I'm watching this video of these arrogant idiots, elitist snobs that think they know everything, think they can rule over the people, and don't think the people have rights. Okay, think about that. They're actually arguing against the people having rights. What kind of pompous asses would do that? Well, you know, the folks that are in government, the folks that are from the prestigious law schools. This is why I'm so glad I'm not a lawyer. Nothing against Jonathan Mosley, who is a lawyer and is a fantastic lawyer. But the thing is, because I didn't go to law school, I didn't get indoctrinated that elitist snobbery. I didn't, get indoctrinated with the fact that precedent rules over the Constitution, that the Supreme Court can interpret the Constitution. There's another problem, too. Judges don't interpret, okay? Judges are basically umpires. I wish they wore, white and black striped shirts like our umpires do, okay? Give them a whistle. Give them a whistle and a clipboard and that's it. All they're there to do is to make sure the rules of evidence are followed, the trial is followed. Oh, listen, did I tell you the story how I got thrown out of court for telling the judge that I'm going to follow the Constitution and he should too? Open court. I was thrown right out. I got standing
out.
Oh, yeah. It's like a standing ovation. You got to stand up for your rights. Anyway, so what these folks are doing is and this is a very, very typical leftist tactic. They lie about what you say because then it's easier for them to argue against their own lie. So they'll lie about you and then say, well, this is what you said. It's like when a leftist says, so what you're saying is, no, that's what you're saying, I'm saying. So in the simplest point of view, they redefine the argument. And so what you first have to do is always define the argument properly. I've got an article on, conservative glossary. I forgot what it's called, My Conservative Glossary, which actually defines a whole bunch of new terms for people. But you have to phrase the argument in the correct terminology. Like you'll never hear me say assault weapon. It's always freedom rifle. Totally different term, totally different conception. That's what makes a difference. So when they say human rights as opposed to individual rights, they're saying universal human rights that everybody is entitled to, okay? Well, that's not how rights work, all right? So we talked about rights and lefts. Those are lefts, L-E-F-T-S, lefts, which is very hard to say, by the way. But anyway, so a left is what the government gives you by taking the labor and property and taxes of other people and to give to you. In other words, things like education. Well, everybody has a right to an education. Yeah, but in saying that, this is kind of a fine line. Let's see if I can define this properly. There's a difference between having the freedom to acquire an education on your own and the right, meaning you have the right that someone else makes it possible for you to go. And in other words, if you have a right to an education, then someone else has to pay for it. Okay, that's not a right. That's a left. That's something that you're given. And rights in their purest form are what you exercise. I think we went over this last time. A right is what you exercise individually. It comes to you, from God, as I understand it. It comes to you from your creator. You are endowed at birth. So your birthright, this is what a birthright is. So you are born with your rights. So every human on the planet, if you want to look at it that way, every human's born with rights. But that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about when we talk about rights is the separation of those rights that you're born with from any touching of them by government. That's probably the best way to explain it. And so when they come along and say, well, we're talking about a charter of human rights, that's an entirely different thing than a bill of rights. Because a charter, as I understand a charter, when the government charters a bank, for example, all right, what do? They give that bank the rules and the permission to operate. That's your charter. As long as you follow your charter, the government will let you operate. Well, if you have a charter of rights, it's exactly the same thing for people. as long as you do what the government says and you live up to the responsibilities. And if you look on those documents, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, your Australian Bill of Rights of 2019, the Victorian, you know, Charter of Human Rights, they all say the same thing: rights and responsibilities. So in other words, you can only exercise your rights in terms of the responsibilities. Well, that's an abrogation of rights. That's a denial of rights. So in other words, you have the right to free speech as long as you don't offend people that we tell you, you know, is offensive. Well, that's no right of free speech at all. When this idiot last night said that, well, we can't have a right to free expression, how do we define free expression? It's easy. It's what people say or communicate or do. There's your definition, idiot. You know, and then again, if you use that right, you're responsible for it in the sense that what you say, in other words, if you say something that is libelous, slanderous, or anything like that, you're still responsible. You can still be sued for that. Okay. Same thing with firearms rights are the easiest ones for me to describe. I have a gun right, by the way. I didn't include it, but I got one if you need one. So just let me know. that's an easy one. But in other words, with a firearm, for example, in other words, here you have the absolute right, and rights are absolute within their context. I can explain that too. But you have the right to own and carry a gun. Now, how you use it determines everything, because there are lawful uses and unlawful uses. Okay, so in using, you may still, you know, break laws and things. You're not guaranteed that. You're not guaranteed the use any way you want. Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense. But the idea that the first thing that I really want to get across is that government rights are not a charter. I mean, rights are not a charter from government. Because they can deny them, they can abridge them, they can restrict them, they can eliminate them, they can do whatever, they can declare an emergency and remove them. As long as you have a situation where rights are coming in a charter from government, that, again, those are no rights at all. You need an absolute separation of rights from government. Rights are yours. Rights are not government's. Rights are yours. You're born with them. And if you understand that you're born with them and you understand that you have to maintain the separation from government, government neither creates nor can either create nor destroy rights. Rights are not given by government, so they can't be taken away. You're born with them. The government can't touch them. That's the difference between a charter where they give you the permission slip, where they give you the rules to exercise your rights, or a bill of rights where we tell the government, you can't go here. You are prohibited from touching these things. These are ours. We own them. That's the difference. How am I doing?
Good.
Okay, good.
So go on.
No, I'm done. That's it. More questions.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'll be doing all the talking. That's no fun.
Yes. So the main, I think, distinction here is that there's a separation between government and the individuals.
Yes.
And an individual's right to something doesn't mean that they have a right to use it inappropriately.
Well,
but where's
yeah.
the line?
Ah, now this is in the preamble. And I actually – no, it's a good question. I think I jumped on it already because I'm so anxious to cram as much as I can into this hour here. All right, so here's how it works.
Okay.
As I said here – where did I put it in my preamble? Here we go, preamble. To maintain a constant – this is the second paragraph. To maintain a constant state of liberty, government must be created and remain at the point of balance of minimum laws, regulations, court decisions, and policies to ensure the maximum individual freedom possible while using powers of enforcement only as necessary to neither descend towards anarchy nor totalitarianism. And what I came up with, and I was thinking about how to explain this, it's the pyramid of liberty. It's the pyramid of balance. So just imagine in your head, and you can make a really great graphic. I'm sure you know a graphic artist that can do a great job with this. So imagine a one-foot ruler. Okay, you can put it on the table, or just imagine a one-foot ruler. On the left is zero. That's totalitarianism. Okay, we talked about that with your freedom rating. Okay, so on the left side of this ruler is zero. That's absolute totalitarianism. On the right side, 12, you know, represents total anarchy. No rules, no laws, no nothing. Okay, now is that ultimate freedom? Yes, but is that liberty? No. Because if you're in anarchy, you're going to spend all your time protecting, you know, what you own. You know, there's going to be looters, there's going to be crime, you know, murders, rapes, robberies, extortion, home invasion, the whole bit. This absolute anarchy is not, you know, is not a state of freedom. The ancient Greeks recognized this. And a lot of societies have recognized you do need some laws. Anybody who understands law and order, and I'm sort of careful with the term order, understand that you have to have, you know, the laws. I forgot who said, someone said, you know, there are laws that set you free and there are laws that enslave you. Okay. What we want to find is that balance point, that point in the pyramid of, and the pyramid was just to raise it up. So I'd say it probably liberty existed about the 10-inch mark. Okay. So if you raise that up a couple inches and you make a pyramid, you see the long slide into tyranny on the left from 10 inches all the way down to zero and the short slide into anarchy. So in other words, on the political scale, you're closer to anarchy than you are to totalitarianism, which is a good thing. So you have just enough laws, you know, against stealing, murder, basically the Ten Commandments stuff, you know, the simple stuff. Don't steal, don't kill. Well, it actually says don't murder. You know, there's a few other things. And you have other laws, you know, property theft, and you know, those kind of things. But in other words, you have just enough laws that you don't infringe on rights. So either way you go from that point of liberty, if you go to the right of it, you're going to descend towards anarchy. If you go to the left of it, you're going to descend towards totalitarianism. And this is how I just came up with this last night, actually. It's a way to explain it. So ideally, a Bill of Rights will define the rights that put you at that absolute point of liberty. Any move to the right, any reduction in the laws brings you towards anarchy, but any increase of the laws starts you on the road to totalitarianism. Does that make sense?
It does. It's a good visual. So, So then, talking about that, then,
mm-hmm.
I've just lost my train of thought. I'll come back to you. Sorry.
That's okay. Well, let me tell you, I've got another thing for you from the Victorian Charter, and this is what makes these documents so dangerous. I've got the Victorian. From the Victorian Equal Opportunity and Human Rights Commission. So you notice human rights are always in this. That's what puts Australia under UN control by using the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It says here about the Charter. This is the Victorian Charter. It says the Charter enshrines civil, political, and cultural rights into Victorian law. Civil, political, and cultural? Well, that's interesting. Public authorities must observe those rights. New policies and legislation must also take into account human rights, and public authorities, for example, people working for the government, must also observe human rights so that members of the community are not treated unfairly. So if the government determines what's unfair, you can't have rights if the government says your right to free speech, your right to private property not be taken, your right to whatever we talked about, you know, a speedy trial, presumption of innocence. Well, that's unfair. This is what's happening in this country now. They're using race to say everything's unfair. Well, you can't have that. That's unfair. That means someone else, you know, you can't have a right if somebody else doesn't have the same right. You know, if you have money and they don't have money, then they have a right to your money because, you know, we all have to be equal, man. That's where this kind of crap leads to. It's not for the government to determine what rights are unfair. Go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's interesting stuff.
Uh-huh.
Where I was going to go after you're talking about that visual is how does this idea of an individual's right, so long as it doesn't tip the scale, so to speak, or stays within a balance,
right?
I guess there's righteousness, how does that work, say, given what we've just all gone through, particularly with lockdowns and many, mm-hmm. many losses of liberty,
mm-hmm.
and in particular, I guess, employers being able to bring in mandates because the governments couldn't do it here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they made it a condition of employment in contracts that were pre-existing to COVID, you know, and so we've still got a large chunk of people that are not working. You know, I've got a friend, a nurse for 26 years and 26 years on night shifts. You try and find someone that dedicated to their work and mm-hmm. for that amount of time, it's not easy to find someone that will do 26 years night shift. Well, mm-hmm. She got fired, 3 days before Christmas. After 26 years, and they dismissed her on the grounds of insubordination, her inability to follow supervisor's directions. And the supervisor's directions was to get the injection. So,
That's a non-employment issue. They should have no right to do that. But anyway, go ahead.
But that doesn't stop them from doing it.
Oh, I know.
Right? They've done it.
Oh, I know. Believe me.
Let me. I'll just get through the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. So after a 26-year career in nursing, an unblemished record up until not being willing to take the injection and then being dismissed for insubordination, she's now cleaning people's homes just so she can pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's nothing wrong with people that clean homes. God love them, you know, for what they do. But this is somebody who has a 26-year career. So how is this idea an ideal that we're working on going to protect her individual rights in the future? Because there's no question they're coming up with, you know, another one of these viruses is heading our way. And then we've got the climate change lockdowns, which people don't even, can't even fathom that it's coming.
What, climate change lockdowns? I've never heard of that.
Okay, well, there you go. You heard it here first.
Okay. No, this is you just opened up a whole new door of investigation. Fortunately, I have some people who are climate experts. Gregory Wrightstone in particular is a climate geologist who's been on the show a few times. He's nationally known now, so he's a little harder to get a hold of. He goes back millions of years of climate, you know, and talks about the necessity of CO2, the CO2 coalition. Without carbon dioxide, we'd all be dead. In fact, we almost had a dangerously low level of carbon dioxide, but that's a whole other story. I'll tell you about that sometime different. Climate change lockdowns. Okay. So, yeah, go ahead and finish.
How is what we're doing, the idea of what we're doing and the ideal of what we're doing, how's that going to help people like her in protecting their individual rights? Or is having a job and getting paid a wage, is that above these basic rights that we're talking about? So where does the current stuff that we've just lived through work with this? That's my overarching question.
No, it's a great question. It's a fabulous question. I'm wrestling with the same question here, and I've been asking this for a good year or two now, ever since COVID started, you know, do you give up your constitutional rights when you go to work? Well, there's a balance in there too. So, yes, the government cannot make a law abridging your free speech, but does that mean you can get up on your desk in your accounting firm and, stand there in your swimsuit and proclaim, the end of the world? No. I mean, as long as you have access to your rights somewhere else at work, that's a different situation. In other words, it's like Colin Kaepernick, who I think is world famous for taking a knee during our Star Spangled Banner. You know, can he take a knee, when he's out of uniform? Sure. But if he's representing the team, they can still fire him. Okay. So, but as long as he can exercise his rights somewhere else, you know, that's okay. And so that's where I draw the distinction. But the idea that you give up your rights at work, especially when those rights have nothing to do with work, that's a whole different story. But this is a coming fight. We're going to have the same fight here in this country too, that rights apply on the job. See, the reason the government went to the job, the reason our government, whether the lockdowns were done, through, or the lockouts, the mandates were done through the job, is because it's not recognized that your rights apply on the job. And to a certain extent, in order to do your job, I can understand, you don't have to exercise your freedom of speech on the desk, at work. Okay. You can exercise it after work. And that to me is appropriate. I understand that. On the other hand, you have a right to your own body. And if you're going to do something that affects you all the time, the fact that you spend part of your time at work does not mean that work not only has control of you at work, but has control of you for the entire rest of your life and may permanently change your health for the rest of your life, more than likely if you take the jab, and that they cannot require that as a condition of work. You cannot be required to sacrifice your health, especially on an experimental drug, as a condition of work. So we have the same fight. And that's why the government went to the corporations. Now, the question is, what was the corporation getting for it? How much were they paid off to do this? How much money, benefit, reward, contract, what are these companies getting out of this? Do you know that? Because that becomes coercion then. And suppression of rights,
She worked for a public hospital, so... It's the government put pressure and this organized, the public hospital was always going to do this because it's owned and operated by the government, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So my question is still remains though, is there anything we're doing here that's going to help us through? Because this isn't a one-off event. This isn't happening just once. And it doesn't matter what the reasoning is, but how can we, and how is what we're doing here going to be able to help people in these scenarios, or is that above all of this?
No, it's not above it at all, but we may need another clause to it. Now, I've got to write out, let me see, I've got one of these ones here, involves commerce. Let me see if I put it down here. Every person lawfully in Australia has a right to freedom of movement, choice of residence, modes of transportation, choice of energy use, engagement in commerce, choices of lifestyle and other personal choices, and these should not be infringed for any presumed public interest, scientific theory, real or imagined, or any purpose of social engineering. That's a conglomeration of a bunch of things. Go ahead. What do you think?
Yeah, no, you're right. I remember reading that. Yep.
Okay. So engagement in commerce.
So you're saying it's in there.
Well, it is, but it isn't. We might have to make it more clear. And
I think so.
Yeah, okay. So in other words, in this country, you'll hear something called right to
work.
But
it's on the right track.
But that's different.
It?
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, engagement in commerce could also be business, I was thinking. Yeah, go ahead.
This isn't about a right to work per se.
No.
It's a right to not be bullied out of work because you're unwilling to do something that wasn't in your contract in the first place, A, and mm-hmm. B, is irrelevant to her. You know, it wasn't her ability to perform her duties were not going to be impacted by whether or not she'd had the injection. So it's different go on.
Well, I was going to say, we have one from your 2019 Bill of Rights. No person may be subjected to medical or scientific experimentation without that person's free and fully informed consent. That would cover it. That would apply to any aspect of your life, work, home, you know, everything.
But it doesn't go far enough because that stands now, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about informed consent. It was an unwillingness to have it. She didn't want a medical procedure put into her body. She just didn't want it, experiment or not. And that's cost her a 26-year career. So
let me work on that. I can message you.
And there's many people like her. I mean, I'm telling you about a personal friend of mine, but this story's, you know, thousands, maybe millions of times over across the world of people just like her, you know, whether they're an office worker, a hospital nurse, you know, a police officer, or working for the local bank. You know, people in all of these arenas have lost their jobs. And, you know, it's for it goes against what should be a personal or an individual right to choose what's right for you or not right for you.
I'm just saying it really applies to employees as opposed to employers, because small business people can
not
say,
in our,
screw
not in
this.
Our
oh, employers?
Not in our
like
case.
Small business
I,
people?
I can't open my business again unless I get vaccinated.
Oh.
Unless I take the injection.
Oh. Oh, we do need a stronger commerce. We need a commerce and employment clause. Yeah.
I think it's the right to work, whether self-employed, whether self-employed or under contract, you know, whatever the right term is there, because we want to be able to in the future say, you know, no. You know, shot number 15 is a no from me. You know.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. And let me get to. I got Cindy on the line now too, who does her medical freedom report. I asked her to call in a bit early and then give the report because I know you have to leave at the top of the hour. So let's get her around. Cindy's the perfect person to ask about this. Cindy Cagle, who does our medical freedom report. Cindy, we're wrestling with the idea of work, which is something you do all the time. You haven't seen the Australian Bill of Rights that I sent to Jen. Basically, Jen, I'm going to hold that to, you know, until, you know, if you want to send it out first and before we, you know, send it out to a bunch of folks here. I mean, I can do a press release on it or I can hold it back. I mean, I really want to respect what you want to do with it first. Sometimes it's best not to. But anyway, this is a great question though for Cindy is where do
okay.
you know, how do we apply our rights at work? At what point do we say, you know, cause you still have to, you know, if you say a right to work, well, people say, well, you can't fire anybody then. That's not true. So we need to structure a right that allows people to maintain their constitutional rights at work but not to the extent where the employer doesn't have any control or supervisory control over the employee. Cindy, did you follow much of that earlier, or are you just joining us now?
I'm sorry, I'm just joining you, so I haven't heard much. Just that I think Jen was saying that even as a business owner, Australia is able to determine whether you can have a business or not, not being vaccinated.
Jen?
Correct.
Wow, that's incredible. Although that, I mean, it's through a different avenue, but, you know, OSHA was trying to do the same thing here with not offering business license to small business owners if they weren't vaccinated. It hasn't gone anywhere to this point, but, you know, it was something they were trying to accomplish.
Sure.
Yeah, the courts threw out.
So,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Deb.
No, you go.
Okay, I was going to say the courts threw out the OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration mandate, because what they're talking about, you know, vaccines, that's not an OSHA thing. OSHA regulates things that actually occur at the workplace. You know, in other words, if you were making vaccines, you know, that'd be a different thing. Then OSHA might have some jurisdiction, but it still comes under food and drug because this is a drug. And so the idea that that you can't – but here, if you're a small business person and the government says, well, we'd really like to mandate you or encourage you to make sure that all your employees are vaccinated, the small business person can say, screw you. And I think that's why the small business were locked down as opposed to the big companies, you know, like Walmart, you know, which went along with the government and wore masks and tried to get their people all to take the snake oil jab. So that's a different thing, but this is a huge issue, and it's a good one for me to work on before we talk next time and send you some ideas. And I'll talk to Cindy about this as well, is how do we structure work into constitutional rights? See, I think constitutional rights apply at work, you know, but then there's still a reasonable kind of thing. You know, in other words, would it be common sense and reasonable? And then you have to sort of – any right has to have a certain amount of reasonableness to it, you know, for the individual.
Yeah,
you know, I have the right to keep
sense.
And bear arms, but
yeah,
do I want to walk
yeah.
down the street with an AK-47 with a 100-round magazine on it?
Yeah.
That's pretty impractical. I'd rather have a concealed handgun. You know, that seems to me a more practical
right.
thing. Do I have the right to walk down the street with an AK-47
yeah.
according to the Constitution? Absolutely. Would I do it – but would I do it after a hurricane with looters? Yeah. So that's appropriate. So there's a certain
yeah.
– we have to give people – and I don't want to state in law because it's too difficult, but you have to bring to the table a certain amount of intelligence, a certain amount of common sense, and a certain amount of responsibility, not that those responsibilities are enshrined in the Bill of Rights so the government can use them against you, but you have to have a certain reasonableness about it. And so that's why I say you don't have to exercise your free speech right at your desk in the accounting firm, you know, by throwing your clothes off, standing there in your swimsuit and arguing, you know, and making pronouncements about whatever. That's, yeah, you're exercising free speech, but it's the wrong place, pal. You know, you got to, you know, there's still
yeah,
avenues where you can do that in a street corner. Yeah.
Don't
yeah.
forget, my question is,
yeah.
can we cover it here, or is
yes.
it at a level above the
no.
individual rights that we're talking about?
No,
so
no,
that's,
no.
I guess the, right.
I think we have to cover it here because this will be the model for our own country. The things that we're doing now and talking about,
right.
Canada may pick this up, you know, in fact, our see now when our Bill of Rights was
well,
written back in the 1700s.
Once we've got this right, this could
yeah.
be. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go on. You go ahead.
Well, a quick example. Our Constitution was written back at a time when most people worked on their family farm. Okay. You didn't have employment. You didn't have large companies. The biggest company, I think, in the 1700s was the East India Tea Company, you know, and they had ships and horrible things they did, you know, between India, the United States, and the tea trade. Most of that was done on the oceans, you know, and with the taxes and things like that. But the average American wasn't really affected by corporations other than the East India Tea Company at the time of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. So they wouldn't have thought to incorporate work in. They didn't incorporate, you know, education in because everybody was homeschooled. So it would never have occurred to them to put those things in. This is why I say that the Bill of Rights in 1787, you know, does not – most of it applies, but not all of it. You know, so now we have to add things like technology that has changed, you know, as far as communication.
Yeah,
you know, if that has changed.
Yeah.
Medical procedures, you know, I mean, the science that we have now, you know, the things that are amazing what we can do now. And a bunch of other things have changed, but work – and school, you know, but work especially, you have to be able to incorporate work into your individual rights. you know, for things that make sense. In other words, the right over control over you, not control, not taking away from supervisory, the legitimate supervisory powers of a corporation, but the things that affect you.
Issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's well within the purview of the corporation, and we may have to put those exclusions in. But the thing is, how can we secure the rights of the individual at work so that none of these principles are, this may be actually it, securing the rights are secured at work that affects the individual personally, not regarding the actual job. So in other words, a jab would affect you personally. Go ahead. How do we get out of this?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, which then also extends to other discrimination. Maybe the word is medical discrimination. I'm not sure, but I do think, this has to speak to what we've just lived through, Otherwise it's not authentic to the time we're bringing it in, and I want to address within this the opportunity
medical
to correct some of the wrong.
Yeah, that's Cindy would help with that, with talking about medical discrimination, because she's dealt with that whole issue.
We've got that legislation here, and we're trampling all over it. So don't follow our lead.
Don't follow ours either, my love, because we've trampled over everything here too. And that's been, that's really spirit breaking. That's been really hard to watch them do, and when you know someone's doing the wrong thing deliberately by you, it's a very hard thing.
How do they do it?
Witness. You mean from a conscience standpoint?
Yeah, I'd love to get a good psychologist. How do they do that? How do people, derive joy from controlling others in such barbaric fashions?
I don't know that they have a connection with joy. I don't think they're operating in the same type of consciousness that we operate in. I think there's a certain element that has to be shut down. I'm no psychologist.
Yeah.
I've asked these questions myself many times. It's a bit like how do you flick the switch on someone, It's like you have to have a certain part of you that just isn't allowed in. And I think you become extremely desensitized too. And I liken it to a drug addict versus, the first time that you might be around people that are maybe doing drugs, you might smoke a bong or whatever, Like you have a very basic thing, maybe like a bit of marijuana. And then the next, as you sort of ingrain yourself a bit more, you take something a bit bigger, a bit nastier, a bit, more strife sort of thing. Then before you know it, you're dealing in drugs, right? You're selling them on to other people. And then you end up in that sort of chain of command. You become a proper drug runner, and then you might even be a drug cartel. And so those people are so far away from the day-to-day, humanity, heart-centered sort of normality, like how the normal people live, You can't even see that world anymore. You're so far removed from it. So that's what I liken it to when I look at some of our heads of government here. They have to be removed from reality that you and I know, and how we deal with, society, community, neighbourhood, friend, family, They just don't operate on those levels because they can't remember what that's like. And I think you have to be that desensitized and that removed to be able to do what they do. Because they don't only just do it, they do it with gusto. Over here, it's almost with a smile on their face. You can
well,
see
like the video.
Them feeding off the power and the control. It's been quite extraordinary.
Yeah. The video that you sent me, that they're actually smiling.
It's like a drug.
They're smiling and arguing against the Bill of Rights. Saying they had three things they put out. They said it's unclear language. I don't think anything about the language I wrote is unclear. They said it will have unintended consequences. What, too much freedom? And the last one was it transfers all the power
to
unelected
judges. You mean on that video
judges.
That I sent you?
Yeah. But they were they were congratulating themselves for arguing against individual rights.
The Bill of Rights.
It was fascinating.
I know. It's
and they were proud of it.
Yeah, it is fascinating. Yeah, I'm with you. And you should send Cindy the link if you're interested in this topic, Cindy, because it's quite extraordinary.
I'll post it on my
page. People got together and...
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I was going to say I was going to post it on my page. But yeah. Did you have more, Jen? More on that?
Oh, it's okay. No, you're good. You're good.
Okay.
So I guess that's an issue, you know, that I thought about. And then just there's just some specifics that I don't quite understand.
Okay.
And I don't know whether now's the and this sort of format is the right place to sort of go through those, or whether or not we just talk about them, you know, off air. And I feel like some accompanying notes just to qualify what some of the things mean, or maybe they can be reworded or something.
Okay. I'm fine with making it all public. You know, I'll make this all public if you want, or we can hold it back. So I'm going to leave that to you because you know more about Australia and about the people you want to talk to and share this with. So we can keep it as private or as public as you want. I'm happy to discuss any part of it. I like doing things openly here to a large extent because people see the process. They see how we think and the things that we're thinking about. I mean, that discussion on how we're going to incorporate constitutional rights at work is huge because I'm wrestling with exactly the same thing here. And when people listen to us, they'll see that this isn't perfect. They'll see that we struggle with issues. They'll see that there are many factors that have to be taken into account. We don't just sit down in lockstep and put things on paper and say, here. You know, and even then it has to go to the people in the government in a referendum. And so the bills we post are public. The commentary is public. You know, this is the whole point of a citizen legislature is as much as possible we do things open. The only thing I want to hold back, and it's perfectly, I think, acceptable to do so, is if it's going to hurt your cause that people will start arguing against it before you've had a chance to present it to the people you want it to get everybody on board and understanding, you know, because you know the arguments are going to come against it. We already know what they are. And so in that case, you might want to hold back. But I really leave it up to you because you know Australia better than I do right now as to where you think the best balance point of revealing here what you want to talk about and saving this recording and passing that around or holding back because strategically, you know, people are just going to mess with you and distort it and lie about it. People will get the wrong impression. The media who supports no Bill of Rights will argue against you, demonize you, and do all the things they do here. So in that respect, it's worth holding back. How's that do? Does that make sense? Put it in perspective?
Okay. Yeah. Not the question I was beginning to ask you, though. What I was getting at was, if that's okay, it happens. What I was getting at was more so, you know, like if we go through this almost line for line, we won't be able to do it in 10 minutes for a start.
Right.
And so, yeah, we'd probably want to make another time to go through it. As I did put down in our written conversation, you drafted this, so you're welcome to do whatever you want with it. It may or may not at this early, very early stage. I mean, I put it into two conversations that I explained to you yesterday, and already a barrage of stuff has come up, which I've then had to,
let's
you know,
do that.
Right.
Yeah, I've got the notes right here.
I'd like to try and get to the starting gate and get something that is sorted out in my head at least.
Mm-hmm.
Of course we're going to go through the public consultation process. That's the whole point.
Right.
But what I have learned, and this is not in this realm because I'm brand new to this and I am literally, you know, at the starting gate with knowledge. So I'm trying to get myself up to speed so that when I do take this out there and start consulting with people, I understand what it says. And right now I don't understand what it says.
Hmm.
I mean, I do, but there's some parts of it that I don't. That's all. And so putting it out there yesterday without even showing what the contents of it was, as you know, everything that's come back I've shared with you. So, but you're welcome to do what you want. You know, I'm not here to debate whether or not you're ready to circulate it. You go right ahead and do that. I just need to go through it a little bit and begin to understand some of the wording so that I can stand up with it. Otherwise, I already know if I don't have the answers, my credibility as a person bringing this out there is going to be
exactly
smashed.
Well,
in the
I'll
first
tell you what
hour,
then.
You know.
Yeah. Let me share it with some of the my Action Radio folks and a couple of close friends, and let me hold it to that. And that way, you know, we'll have a chance to release this when you're better, you know, armed and ready with your arguments that you know are coming. And well, so I already have a lot of arguments. So where's your confusion, first of all? Let's start with a couple of points in the time we have.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I need some guidance. You know, with the amount of content here, I know we're not going to be able to cover it in the next 10 minutes.
Oh, no.
So should we...
We'll just try one or two points. Just tell me anything that confuses you about it. You know, it can be completely random. It's just whatever, just anything that you struck, the language. Just ask me, why did you write that, Greg? You know, and I'll tell you.
Okay. I'll just read through it and just give me a moment. I'll be
I'll talk to Cindy first, and then when you're ready, just, come.
Okay, so we'll go back to... Well, I can go to the first line. All rights are individual. There are no group or collective rights.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I can, because if you have a collective right, it has to be exercised collectively. And if you have to exercise it collectively, it means you all do the same thing. And if you all do the same thing, there's no individuality about it at all. So in other words, if I have a right, if I want to do something, if I want to say something, and I'm required to stick with a collective, you can't express that right. Rights are endowed to individuals. It only works that individuals can express them. And this is the difference between when a right versus a left, as we explained it earlier, you know, where, and this is my term of convenience. I hope it works for people. But when someone says you have a right to an education, you have a right to healthcare, you have a right to, you know, form a family. That's even in the UN Declaration. You have a right to all these things.
Mm.
Well, no, what they're really saying, and this is the hard part, what they're saying is you have a right to them and someone else has to pay for it. Someone else has to give it to you. You know, you don't have to earn it. You don't have to achieve it. See, I believe everybody has a right to secure an education for themselves. You know, you can get loans, you can buy it, you can earn it, you can do scholarships, you know, you can work hard for a couple of years. I mean, there are all kinds of ways that you can get an education. No one should be barred from getting an education. You should have access to every class that you want to take. You know, whatever school or form or private tutor or apprenticeship or internship it is. You know, but the thing is, does someone else have to give it to you? You know, are you entitled to go to college? Mm. Is everybody entitled to go to college for 4 years as part of a right to an education? So the problem with the collective right is the government then uses that to control the right. They say, well, wait a minute, this is a collective right, so we have to control it. We have to have a national health care program to make sure everybody has health care. And as you know, what happens, you get rationing and all kinds of other things. Whereas if I had the right to my own health care, I could secure it. I could get a medical savings account. I could get maybe a voucher system. I could spend the money as I chose. I could then find out. I could consent or not. I could get fully informed, you know, and that would be my right to be fully informed, okay, as an individual. But how I express that, you know, what if I don't want to get a vaccine? You know, in other words, if everybody has a collective right to be healthy, you know, then the government will tell you how to be healthy. Then where are you?
Yeah, gotcha.
Does that make sense?
So, So in the context now of putting this bill out for comment, you know, which is what we're preparing for to start that consultative process, is it worthwhile, even if it's for that and then removed later? Basically what you've just said there as an answer, should we be including that in this as a statement of explanation? Because what we want people to do is comment on it. But if someone gave this to me, now I might be new at this, but I'm intelligent around the conversation, if you know what I mean. My first question is going to be, all rights individual, there are no group or collective rights. What does he mean by that?
Okay.
So,
and that's where we have commentary.
Should we put in?
Yeah. If you put it in the bill itself, it's going to get messy. See, what we did in the United States was they wrote the Federalist Papers. When they wanted to try and explain the Constitution, there's some 85 papers that were written to explain it. So we can write papers explaining each one. All right? And so that would be a good thing. But you don't put them in the actual Bill of Rights.
Gotcha. Yeah, but you can they're reference notes kind of.
Right.
By
so we need, what
is
we need
what
are
yeah.
The equivalent of the Federalist Papers. Yeah. We need what we need are the Bill of Rights Papers or something like that. The other reason for not having group or collective rights is that you don't have minority groups, racial groups, other groups saying that, you know, or like take gay marriage, for example. It's one of my favorite examples. You know, do people have a right to a gay marriage? Well, there is no right to marriage. Why? Because it's not individual. You don't express, you know, marriage individually. You express it collectively, you know, by contract. What's that, Cindy? She's married.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good example.
Marriage is a contract.
Isn't it?
Okay. So if you think marriage, you know, divorce is a contract. There are procedures. There are legal procedures you go through to get married. There are legal procedures you go through to get divorced. Your action within the contract of marriage is a group effort between two people, as defined in law currently between a man and a woman. Okay. So do gay people have a right to get married? Under law, I would say no, because marriage is not an individual, only in the sense that marriage is not an individual right. Now, do gay people have a right to be together and do whatever, you know, they want and declare themselves married personally? Sure, absolutely. People can do what they want. I would never stop anybody from being with anybody else they wanted to be with. And I want to make that really clear. But in law, the idea that only in law, in terms of the fact that is marriage a right? No, it's not. Because it's a contract between two people. Therefore, it doesn't qualify as a right. That's why, because all rights are individual.
So all this talk about gay rights marriage is a farce.
As far as I'm concerned.
Wow.
but I wouldn't say people, I wouldn't stop people from getting together. And if they want to hold a service or a ceremony, declare themselves married, that's fine. But in law, by definition, marriage is not a right. It's a contract, and therefore it doesn't qualify as a right.
So we had a plebiscite, I think is the right way to pronounce it, here in Australia.
Plebiscite, yeah.
Plebiscite, thank you, sorry.
That's okay. I just remember that.
Which is the next level down from a full referendum on whether or not gay couples had the right to get married. And you've just shot
that
down.
Well, no, because marriage isn't a right. And see, you understand, I look at things, I approach them, you know, from completely different angles. See, most people meet arguments head on. Someone says, well, this is the way it is. And the other person will say, well, this is not the way it is. And I'll come up with a completely side view. So, well, you're not basing it on, your reality is wrong. Your fundamental premise is wrong. In the same way that affirmative action is wrong. You know, affirmative action. You know how that works, right? You know, minority groups get preferential treatment, get hired more, get more government, get higher up on the ladder to be hired by government. That's not a right. You don't have a right to, because it's not individual. That's why all rights are individual.
Gotcha.
Therefore, affirmative action doesn't work. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah.
I just thought you might find that fascinating. That's all. That's how far gone we are here.
Well, no, we're just as far gone here. I mean, the Supreme Court.
Go on.
No, our Supreme Court actually said the same thing. Yeah, they said that, that gay marriage is a right, and like gay marriage can't be a right, because marriage isn't a right. And if marriage isn't a right, how can gay marriage be a right?
I understand your argument, which is why I mentioned it, because I think it's kind of funny that we spent all this money and every single Australian has to vote
alone. Yeah, we did. No, it's a perfectly good
all
example.
Right,
go ahead.
I do want to speak now, if that's okay. So we got through the first line, okay?
That's a good start.
Explaining that, but I think what we did do was clarify that we do want to have those explanatory notes for each right, and I really feel that's going to help people immensely, you know, who I bring into at least into these initial consultative processes. You know, because I'm not looking to go from, you know, 0 to 1,000. I want to hold some small group sessions like I did yesterday. And that's when I got all that stuff thrown at me. And that was just with a handful of friends, mind you.
Yeah.
I think, you know, by rolling it out, my job when I go to these smaller focus groups, which is how every corporation or every business, every new product, they all start with focus groups, you know. They start
agreed.
They go to the public, and I want to do the same. And so my job in that will be to teach them what you're teaching me, right? So those accompanying notes I think are going to be quite critical. So if you're keen to do this on air, then I think we, you know, I'm going to propose if we could to make another time to do that, because I, you know, it's midnight here now, and I've got to be at my desk at 5:30, and I need to get some rest. So,
well, no, let's, we can do it.
That was me last night.
Yeah, we can do Zoom call. I'd like to do it on the show, just because it's a record that everybody can partake in. But it's up to you. I think Pianchi has a question before you go. But I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
Okay,
no,
sure.
I'll get one more question in. Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't mind. Yeah. I'm more than happy to do it on the show, just that,
okay,
you know, if we do it, we'll do it as I hopefully get through them, but maybe before the show even, you know, we could just work on those accompanying notes and then anyway, would that be possible?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. In fact, we can take them one or two or three at a time because these are complex. You know, this is a whole new orientation for people. No one's ever been told. Australians and even Americans. I mean, this Bill of Rights that I wrote for you and for Australia goes beyond our own Bill of Rights, way beyond, in terms of freedom.
Mm.
So these are new concepts for a lot of people. It also, go ahead.
Well, yeah. Look, I totally understand where you're coming from with that, and know it too. And I think that's part of what the template that we develop here will be able to be used broadly. You know, not just for us, we're just the first. And so, you know, this will be something that I think we can pass on to any country, even those that have a Bill of Rights, but may want to update theirs, you know.
That would be wonderful.
We're the only, one of the only Western world. Sorry, go on.
No, I'm just going to say, I think this is wonderful. The, what we are creating here is a model for every, you know, for the British Commonwealth countries, for the United States, for any, you know, Switzerland is interested in what I do, because I saw them at CPAC in 2018. Swiss TV station wanted to interview me. They just had to pack up because they had a flight to catch. But there's a lot of people around the world, especially I would, you know, the English-speaking world, then we go to Europe, and then we move from there. You know, there are places that are going to be very interested in what we're doing here, because we're on the forefront. We're on the cutting edge. This is the,
well, when,
you know, I call this the cutting edge of freedom for a reason.
I love it. When can we do that, Greg? When can we get together? Do we talk about that off air?
I'll tell you off air. We'll actually schedule it, and then I'll announce it to people. I'm going to send you a schedule so that you have the times, and you can pretty much pick what you want. Anytime that's free, that's an open discussion hour, or even if you have, if we want to preempt.
So long as it's at 11 p.m. my time.
Well, no, actually, I would do a Saturday show with you. I can do a Saturday show.
Yeah,
I've got 3 hours
good.
Per day.
Yeah,
I just don't do it because I'm exhausted. But if you want to do a Saturday show that, at a convenient time for you and hold group sessions there, we'll do a three-hour, you know, lunch show for you.
Before we go to groups, I think we both need to understand what we've got here, because I can't bring it out without you if I don't understand it. And I think the credibility thing, but the points I'm raising here are going to be the same points that you're going to get whoever you take this to. So I'm sort of trying to just, you know, put it out there that, you know, if we can get a sort of process here so that we get it right, and we get shouted down for the right reasons, not because I feel ill-prepared to take it out there and be able to stand by it at this stage, not because it's not good, but because I don't understand some of it, that's all. Yeah. So look, I think I've hopefully made it, how I'm hoping we can go forward from here. But obviously it's your document, so do with it as you will.
Well, I'm going to be still reserved with it because I want to give you the chance to get to those groups, to have those focus sessions, to get to the people, and let's find out from them the arguments we're going to get, and let's prepare counter arguments that make sense in the simplest possible fashion. That's fine with me. That's perfectly good. That's exactly why I
got a couple of sample groups together yesterday to flush out the objections. Absolutely spot on.
I love it.
Thank you so much for everything. Did Pianchi have a question before I
let's go, Pianchi?
Leave.
Pianchi, you're on
with I was just listening, and I was listening because I feel like I'm listening in on the birth of something big.
Yes.
We think so too.
This is huge. Yeah. It's not lost on me, and that's why I want to make sure I really understand it so that I can take this out there and, you know, give it the gusto that it needs. This is historical. no matter how far down the line we get, what we're doing right in this second is historical. We're writing a Bill of Individual Rights for Australia, for country. Yeah. It's massive. Yep.
I love
and
it.
And you have the beauty of learning from, you know, where America has gone wrong in what you're doing.
That is a blessing in this scenario, Cindy, indeed.
Yeah, yeah.
And also we have the blessing of what we've lived through the last couple of years. We don't have to try and imagine what authoritarian government could look like what lengths they'd be prepared to go to in eroding individual rights. It's all there right in front of us.
I think, for us as well, having those Bill of Rights, you can use, you know, how America has handled it, because even as a country that does have that Bill of Rights, they've been able to circumvent it through the emergency, authorization. So you've got some foresight that our forefathers didn't have.
That's a great way to put it. And that's absolutely, this is why doing it right now is so important, because we've just come through it. It's fresh.
Yeah.
It's raw. and it's definitely going to be more engaging for people if we can take it to them and say, look, this addresses as best we can what we've just been through as well.
Yeah.
That's going to get a lot of people's support, just on that alone. But yes, thanks for pointing out, Paoki. I hope I'm saying your name right. Thank you for pointing out the significance of this, and it's why I might sound a little intense about it, because as I said to Greg, this isn't just someone you've happened across that we've gone, oh yeah, we'll do citizen law in Australia, why not? I'll get back to you when I think of something. It's like he's taking on the Bill of Rights and proposing that our constitution is changed. It actually doesn't get any bigger than that. I can't think of anything bigger. Other than a full revolution.
This is a revolution. This is a peaceful revolution. This is a revolution of conscience, of the mind.
Indeed.
This is the alternative to bullets and ballots, bills. So I created this so that bills would be the alternative, because the ballots can be bought, influenced, campaigned, spent money on, and in our case, stolen.
That's true.
Our country. Bullets you don't want, because you don't want to be in a civil war. Nothing good comes out of that. But bills, the idea that the citizens themselves, us, will write the laws that we consent to be governed by. Remember the basic guiding principle of Action Radio. We the people, give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. That in itself is a revolutionary statement, and that's the guiding principle of Action Radio. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. No people on the planet have ever done that. I always knew this was a revolution.
Well,
I set it up to be a revolution. This is exactly where we should be. This is exactly the plan. What you're doing now, what you're talking about, I've always known that the implications of this were revolutionary. And we are, when I say the cutting edge of freedom, I'm not kidding. Okay, I mean, I do laugh on this show. I do treat a lot of things lightly. But I absolutely know the gravity and the seriousness of this. And I've been working on this for 7 years. So it's perfectly acceptable to be the forefront of a revolution of freedom. That I've already accepted that and have devoted the rest of my life to it. I've already made that promise. So that's not it's not a big thing. I do this every day. But for you and for everybody else that's coming to this, once you start realizing what we actually are doing here, which you've now done, Jen, you understand, you know where this can go, that we can create a situation of freedom unheard of anywhere, at any time, at any place in our history of the world. This is what we're talking about.
Mm.
Yeah, it's kind of fun, isn't it?
And it just so happens that I have a window. Yeah, I have a window where we can be a strong influence, given that we're about to head into a federal election. Mm-hmm. So we can use this as a tool to get the commitment of those that want to sit in our new parliament that will be formed in the next few months. And find out in advance whether or not they...
Yeah.
Sorry?
Do you have your five questions yet, or are you still working on two of them?
Sorry, the five questions.
Yeah, I was just wondering if you formulated more of them? Because I know you got two of them, and I gave you one. You want to do that later? Yeah.
Yes, please. Okay. Let's wrap it up there. And
okay.
Thank you so much for everything again. We're very grateful for this. And the moment's definitely not lost on me, as I'll repeat just for the sake of my own, I guess, reassurance that that's why I'm taking, you know, extra precaution, extra time, extra care in making sure it's fully understood and that we've done as most comprehensive job as we can in getting ready for something to use as a consultative tool to help bring this message to people, because it's going to hit them just between the eyes, just the fact that we don't have one. That's going to be a big shock to a lot of people.
Yeah.
They'll be like, what are you talking about? We have a constitution, yeah, but we don't have a Bill of Rights. So that's where we're starting with a lot of people.
Okay.
So it's important that, you know, we cross as many T's and dot as many I's as we can so that we don't shoot ourselves in the foot, you know?
I don't think we're going to. And
right,
I get so enthusiastic. I keep interrupting. I apologize. I'm so, you know, carried away with this, with this ability to do this now. I've wanted to do this for, you know, what, 30 years. So you've got all that pent up. Yes, finally. Yes, we can do this. That's what I'm dealing with. And that's why I – go ahead. You know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I was listening. There's never too much enthusiasm, so we're very grateful for it. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of show. I must now go get some rest. I only have a few hours, and then I've got to be up again for the next day. But thanks again. We'll talk soon. Thanks, Cindy. I'm sorry I've gone a bit over my time allocation.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Yours.
Thoughts and prayers are with y'all.
Thank you so much, and likewise. Good night, well, good morning to you all. Talk soon, Greg.
Good night, Jen Clark,
bye,
coming from Melbourne. There we go.
Bye.
All right. There we go. Wow. I always love talking to Jen. And again, I can't help it. I get so enthusiastic about this stuff that I say, I want to say stuff. I'm terrible. All right, let's play Cindy's theme. I think Jonathan's going to be a bit late. And so, Cindy, feel free, you know, hang around for a while. And we can discuss anything that was discussed there. We can do medical freedom. We'll do what we usually do. Make it up as we go along.
Mm. Informed consent. The ability to receive the truth for your medical care. And the ability to consent freely to any medical procedure, or not, based on the truthful information received, has completely disappeared in this era of medical, big government, big tech, big pharma, fascism. There are many warriors coming forward to try and keep your medical freedom. This is so you won't be forced to ever wear a mask, and you won't be forced through a government mandate to inject your body with a dangerous experimental gene therapy purposely and deceitfully called a vaccine. Medical freedom is when you aren't forced into anything that violates your individual rights. Join us now as one of those warriors of medical freedom talks about the latest victories and the struggles yet to be won. Join us now for the Medical Freedom Report with Cindy Cagle.
Oh yeah, I'm in the mood now. I'm just like grooving here. This is great. There you go.
I love your enthusiasm.
It gets me in trouble though, because there's too much of it. You know, God. I mean, you combine ADHD with hyperactive activity and way too many ideas in my head, and this is what happens. It's really a curse.
Well, it is exciting. Kind of being able to look back at what our forefathers were doing, and you know, the emotions that must have gone with that process.
Oh yeah. I've read the debates. I read the debate on the 14th Amendment in particular, but the original debates. And I'm going over the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. And it's fascinating. We are literally doing what our founders did. And the problem, one of the problems I see is that people rely too much on the founders. The founders would have wanted us to forge ahead with more freedom. And people are looking at the founding documents and going, okay, that's all we need. Great. You know, let's freeze in time. You know, and that's the last thing that the founders would have wanted. And I was going to tell Jen this, but I figured it would just be more complicated. The things that we're doing now, they can still be amended. They can still be changed. It's not set in stone yet. You know, and so we're going to work on things. I love the idea of doing a work clause. Of having a clause that, and this is going to be tough to define. And when I think about this, I think about health workers that have to take a quote vaccine so they can, practice health. The question is, it seems to make sense. Well, you have to take this vaccine because you got to be healthy for the patients who might be sick. Okay, fine. You know, that makes a certain amount of sense. But what if the vaccine makes you sick? You know, so in other words, where is that balance where you retain your individual rights for things that affect you personally, but still allow, you know, the job to be supervisory over you if you got a boss and things like that, the corporate rules and that kind of stuff. And again, my example is, you know, do you have the right to express your free speech, you know, in an accounting firm where everybody's wearing three-piece suits, standing on your desk in a swimsuit, you know, screaming and yelling, you know, Che Guevara. You know, do you have the right to do that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you have the right to do that, but not at your desk at work. So in other words,
there,
as long as you can exercise your right somewhere. And of course, then the next question is, can you carry a gun at work? And that's a whole different thing because people have died at work because they were told they couldn't carry their gun. So this is a tough issue. Where, and I want to, it's off topic a little bit in terms of medical freedom, but it's individual freedom where, you know, I believe that your constitutional rights apply just as much at work as they do anywhere else, tempered with the reasonableness that it may not be the place to exercise every one of them. And so enshrining that in law in a one or two sentence, you know, amendment to or a bill of right provision is going to be tough. So feel free, help me out.
Well, and again, they have the benefit of seeing how America has on one side of the coin skirted the issue or trampled on it, and on the other side of the coin, how they've been able to work with it to use common sense. So they have an opportunity to learn from the model we've used that isn't perfect.
Yeah. Well, I'll just tell you one or two of the ones that I've done, if you're curious, and then I'll send this to you. Like I say, I'm going to share it. I'll send it to Bianchi too. Don't share it yet. I mean, but I want your opinions on this. The first one was all rights are individual. There are no group or collective rights. That takes care of affirmative action, the LGBTQ thing, all the government programs that try to give people things under the guise of rights. That's why I said all rights are individual. The second one, all rights are absolute within the context of the right. Any infringement on any right, regardless of declared public purpose or justification, condition or emergency, war or pandemic, natural disaster or any other factor, real or imagined by government, is prohibited. That's pretty powerful. That's a pretty strong limitation. You know, in other words, you can't touch the rights. And there, when I say all rights are absolute within the context of the right, think of the Second Amendment. When they have judges and politicians who say, well, an AR-15 is not part of the Second Amendment. Well, yeah, it is, you know, because it's arms, you know. So all rights are absolute within the context of the right. In other words, you can't limit, you can't infringe, you can't do anything. Otherwise, it's not a right anymore. That's one. Let me give you one more. The third one, and these are mine. These are ones that I wrote. These enumerated rights this is one I got from Bianchi, actually. These enumerated rights upon establishment of this Bill of Rights are permanent rights of the people and are not subject to government suspension or revocation for any reason. Only through due process of the established referendum procedure in this Constitution shall amendments be made to these enumerated rights. So the Australian Constitution already has a referendum procedure with a double majority, and it's a pretty good procedure. So in other words, all I did was adopt the Australian procedure for amendments and applied it to this Bill of Rights while still putting in the prohibition of government to suspend or revoke rights for any reason. And that goes with the one above it. You know, no condition or emergency, war or pandemic, natural disaster, or any other factor. So in other words, as Bianchi would say, you know, there is no on and off switch to the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And there's more.
Very necessary because again, they've been able to accomplish that here in America, where we have that established.
Well, and this would, and these rights wouldn't be bad to add to our own Bill of Rights.
Yeah, that's why I say learn from our mistakes, Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love
cross
to see
those
some of
T's
these
that aren't crossed over here.
Yeah. Here's another one too that applies. I've redone the free speech right. Regardless of technology, policy, good intentions, law, regulation, or court ruling, whether public or private, over all methods of communication, there shall be no encroaching upon the right of free speech and the open exchange of information.
Mm.
You like that one?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that would cure all
I'm
your,
wondering
your,
how,
all the Yeah, go ahead.
How would that work with something like Facebook?
Well, Facebook would be included under an open exchange of information and a right of free speech. They could not touch your speech. They could not,
even
not touch your content.
Even though they're not an Australian corporation or...
Well, I mean, you know, foreign corporations have even fewer rights, I would think, in a country. Yeah, I mean, the point is that this is you know, this would go with Australian law. If this were applied in American law, that would go along with Section 230, my amendment to Section 230, which says that social media, you know, Facebook, for example, is not classified as a publisher because they're not writing the things that people are putting on there. They're not okaying them. They're not denying them. Well, they are denying them, you know, but under my law, because they're not, they have immunity from anything that everybody posts unless, you know, they touch it. And if they touch it, they lose their immunity. So that law is perfectly compatible with this law, which calls for the right of free speech and the open exchange of information. That's why I put the open exchange. That's the part that I added. So in other words, this could supersede our own, you know, Congress will make no law abridging the right of free speech or the press. Well, what's the press? Well, the press is a manual printing press. You know, you set the type, you know, you have the old roller, you roll the ink on top of it, and you put a piece of paper over it, and, you know, put a big piece, you know, and then you wind this wheel down, and it actually presses the paper onto the ink and the typeset. That's a press. They don't mean the media. They made a manual printing press with a wheel that screws down paper on top of, you know, metal letters, you know, with ink on them. That's what the freedom of the press is. The freedom to write pamphlets and books. Uh-huh. So tell me about medical freedom. what do you got? Let me, and then we'll see.
Oh, wow. You know, it is busy on a million different fronts. We've got, you know, that SB 7014, the legislation extending the liability coverage to hospitals, you know, sitting on Governor DeSantis' desk. And, you know, the word is that he's probably not going to veto it. I reached out even as late as yesterday to Senator Brockton. I wrote several of our representatives asking for their explanation on supporting it. And I think it's, and certainly I haven't heard back, but I think it's one of those, they focused on that 10% of people that it might benefit, overlooking the 90% of wrong it's doing, and that's by, you know, extending the liability to these hospitals, implementing, you know, these protocols that are proven deadly to lots of people, and I can't wrap my head around how so many of our Republicans, you know, voted for that. So I would love their insight, but I do think it was focusing on the benefit that it gives to, you know, independent doctors outside of a hospital setting prescribing alternative treatments. It's giving them, you know, liability protection from lawsuits and whatnot. But how much of that is going on when we've got 90% of the hospitals, well, actually, it's probably 100% of the hospitals not allowing any protocol but what the CDC and NIH are calling for, and that proves to be problematic for a lot of people. So, you know, trying to get inside their head on that and hear their explanation, it's been difficult, but it's on Governor DeSantis' desk, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be vetoed. So we'll have another year of, you know, the CDC's remdesivir, Ativan, venting protocol.
Death march.
Yeah, that seems to be problematic. And then we've got, as of last night, I posted something where, you know, Republican senators, I don't understand it, Rick Scott being one of them, proposing legislation and there again, for a very small part of society, and that society not being U.S. citizens, they want to allow exemptions to foreign truckers for the vaccine mandate, while they're, you know, turning a blind eye to people flooding through our borders with, you know, unknown vaccination status, while we're putting U.S. citizens out of a job because they're not vaccinated. I just don't understand it.
Oh, well, illegal aliens don't have money. Well, at least not much. So you're not gonna mine them for money. You're gonna mine the American people. You know, they're putting the fortress. You know, it's now Fort Washington, D.C. You know, so the army that should be on our southern border is now guarding our own capital from the American people. So in other words, as I said before, freedom has been declared illegal. There is no freedom.
Yeah.
Well, this is what happens when you have a coup. This is what a coup does. They take away your rights. They take away your freedoms. They put everybody in charge. They use the military against the people. And they bring in this case, you know, a foreign invasion army. This is, they're behaving exactly as a coup behaves. This shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. This is what happens when you let the government pick the government. I know you're shocked.
Well,
yeah. Okay. I understand. Trust me.
I spend, I don't know how much of my time trying to play devil's advocate and rationalize. To understand your enemy those opposing you,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you have to.
To understand their arguments, but you don't have to put yourself in their position of sympathy. So in other words, the devil's advocate.
Oh, there's no, trust me, there's no sympathy. It's just, it's frustrating that I spend so much time trying to understand it and certainly give them the benefit of the doubt of not hearing their own justification. And they are wonderful at spinning it or explaining it in a way that I think calms the minds of so many people.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's called hypnosis.
You know,
it's called mass psychosis hypnosis, yeah. I'm going to get Bianca back in here, too. This is why I asked Jen the exact same question. How is it Australian politicians can find joy in ruining the lives of so many? And I mean, I do ask the same question, so I shouldn't get after you for it. But it's like she says, there's no joy in it. They're desensitized. They're not human. I mean, how do people, you know, push other people into gas chambers? You know, they're just following orders. It's a job. It's like, well, I get my lunch break at 12 and I go home at 5 and I'll push so many people in before lunch and so many after lunch and I've done a good day's work and then I'll go home to my family. I mean, they're torturers. They torture people. Kill them right there on tables and then go home to their wife and kids or husband and kids.
And that brings me to my next point. And I've actually been waiting to bring this up. You know, we talked about last week, pushing back, that being the person that just doesn't go along and what that means to those of us that are doing it. And sure enough, my daughter had an appointment to go have labs drawn at Quest. And, she has a medical condition that is exacerbated by wearing a mask. So she was not wearing a mask, and I was wearing face covering when we walked in, and it was a small waiting room. There were several people there sitting, waiting, wearing their masks, and I was signing her in on the kiosk, and I couldn't get halfway through that before I had a lab tech marching out with a box of masks, announcing that our daughter was going to have to put a mask on. And I explained to her, look, she has a medical condition. She can't. And she continued to reiterate, this is our policy. She needs to have a mask on. She can just hold it up to her face. But she has to have something. And as I'm, struggling with my phone to try and pull up the medical exemption for the mask, she just flat out said, she's not going to have blood drawn here if she's not wearing a mask. So,
they're just following orders. They're being good Nazis. They're being health Nazis.
And what I want to say with that is it was definitely a display of power.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. She held all the power. We either had to leave and not were denied services, or we could plop our butts down until the police came to arrest us for trespassing. the end result was we still were not getting service. And
no, I agree
everybody
with you. Absolutely.
In the
this
waiting
is work, room
work sat
thing.
There,
the same thing.
You know, bleary-eyed.
Power the hell over you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So until people start standing up in numbers that will affect places like Quest, where
mm-hmm.
you've got everybody united saying, okay, I might wear a mask, but she isn't. And until you allow all of us to make personal decisions, you're not drawing anybody's blood. But Americans aren't willing to make the sacrifices to benefit their fellow man. It's become all about me. And as long as I'm getting what I need, you know, it's unfortunate to be you.
Yeah, it's called buying your rights that you already have back
mm-hmm.
with compliance
yeah.
to something that you have no reason to comply with. Most of
yeah.
those boxes, at least they used to, they used to say it does not prevent COVID. All those
yeah.
blue mask boxes, I would take
yeah.
a look and find it. Now what they say is good for bacterial infections. Well, you know,
yeah.
COVID happens to be a virus. Okay.
Yeah.
So I pointed out, someone I saw, I was in Publix the other day, and I said, why are you guys still wearing blue masks? Well, we have to. Let me see the box. Do you want one? No, I want to see the box. Of course, I don't want one. Jesus, what are you thinking? You know, I know they don't work. Anyway, so I look for where it says does not prevent COVID or does not stop the COVID virus. They don't say that anymore. These are the China boxes that everybody's using.
Yeah.
It says, you know, this is effective in preventing bacterial infection. I said, great. Well, bacteria, what, thousands of times larger than viruses? You know, of course they're good against bacteria. I mean, I'm not questioning that. I'm saying that they don't work against viruses. That COVID happens to be a virus, not a bacteria. Duh.
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah. Anyway, let's get Pianki in. I've taken enough of his time. Pianki, what do you think? What do you want to add here?
Yeah, viruses can enter through your eyes. But I'm just listening. It's
okay.
amazing what I'm hearing. I'm just
yeah.
listening.
Well, you made a great comment the other day. I didn't get to thank you enough for it, that you know, that you even get up early just to catch our show just because there's so much incredible things happening, you know, and it's true. I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back. Well, maybe I am a little bit. But the point is, where else can you hear the initiation of a Bill of Rights for another country? We're doing exactly what the founders did. We're just doing it over the air. We're doing it using the electronic medium that we have available to us. But we're doing what they did. You know, we're having a meeting. You know, and we're meeting, you know, across half the world discussing a new Bill of Rights for Australia that Jen's a public figure. She's, you know, she's an international speechmaker. We're not talking about some lightweight here. She's one of the founders and leaders of the Australian Truck Convoy. And to have her working with us, you know, and me being able to help her with this entirely new concept, first of all, even to understand rights in terms of individual as opposed to UN, you know, Universal Declaration collective rights is huge. I know it, but I've already gone through the process. I've already accepted what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. But for other people, especially, you know, who are new to this idea that citizens can actually write their own laws and then submit them to government, it's like, whoa, can we do that? Yeah, you can. It's not against the law to write Congress. Really? With a bill? Uh-huh. Yep. Even my webmaster, Eric Colley, God bless him, God rest his soul, our recently departed webmaster, when he first contacted me, it was really funny. And he's like, you do what? Well, we write bills, you know, and then we submit them to the government. He says, you can do that? Says, yeah, we can. How? Well, I have people share the link. That's it? Yeah, that's it. Can you help me? Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, that was our first conversation. He looked at it, then he comes back to me like a couple of days later. He says, oh, yeah, I guess you can. It was hysterical. But everybody goes through this evolutionary process. And it's quite fascinating.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I could be deceased and the lady that came up and told you about putting the mask on, I would have put the mask on. And I said, oh, ma'am, by the way, I really love that fragrance you have on.
Uh-huh. Oh, in other words, the mask, smelling the aroma of the mask?
No, you can still smell a perfume.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed it. Cindy, did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay. Doing better than me.
It's just, it's disappointing to see and experience, you know, what I've been saying, that the end result is you're still going to be denied service, and Americans are going to sit back and watch it, and that's what happened.
What if we had a Halloween mask on? Would that be all right?
What's that?
What if we had a Halloween mask on when you came up in there?
You know, I honestly don't think it matters. You know, it's just the control of being able to deny somebody service for not doing what they're telling you to do. I don't think it matters what type of mask it was. In fact, I saw something on social media, I think a couple weeks ago, where they went through the same thing, same experience, you know, different vendor, but insisted that they had to put a mask on. So she pulled out a lace mask. I mean, full of holes. And as long as she did that, you know, she was able to proceed. But it was the act of controlling her.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they don't work. You know, there's a guy that wore his underwear on an airplane as a mask. He put it
because
red
it's
underwear.
Not about safety.
Did you hear underwear?
It's not.
No. Put a bandana on, like the old. Remember the old cowboy films when they'd pull up, a bandana over their face. I mean, that's going to be the minimum. At least you get the maximum breathing out of that because you breathe in and out below it. You know. And
well,
so
you've got people that are doing that with those gaiters. That's essentially what it is. But the fact of the matter is, for my daughter, she has a medical condition where anything that is restricting the flow of air into her body gives her symptoms, and that in itself does not reach the society. I mean, there were people of all ages sitting there.
They're into their Nazi
there's
order.
No compassion. No. There's no.
No, and they don't care if she gets sick. They don't care.
Yeah.
The person has
or
rules to follow.
Or that she was denied service that was needed to get medical treatment.
Nope, doesn't matter. As long as you follow the orders, then as long as they're just following orders, so that's okay.
Yeah.
You follow the orders, then you get. But the thing is, she's in the hospital to be treated. She's in there to get a blood or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, she's in there to get treated because there's something that's medically necessary, and
to
do something that's medically dangerous. That's counter all common sense, all rules, guidelines, and everything else. I got to find a way to put customer service into this amendment I'm going to work on. Josie's on the line too. Let's bring her in the conversation as we have sort of like a free for all Thursday. And at some point, when Jonathan can, he's going to join us from CPAC. So we'll get that. That's going to be coming.
Good morning.
Too. Good morning, Josie. What's up?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
About the mask. Good morning. That's what some of the girls at Belk at the mall are wearing. They're wearing like a see-through mask full of little holes. I said, that is cool. She said, well, I'm complying, you know. She's complying with the mask, but the mask is full of holes. So I thought that was cool. But I wanted to call this morning because something is going on with our military and our different type of divisions or our military. They just deployed my daughter's husband. She took him to the airport at 4 in the morning. We don't know where he's going. And he's in Michigan. And the National Guard is swarming Gadsden, Alabama, because I just made reservation last night in a hotel, and I had a hard time finding a hotel for my husband. And the gentleman that I directly called the hotel, and he said, oh, we don't have no rooms, just smoking, and I don't want a smoking room. And he says, no. He says, all the hotels are going to be booked with the National Guard here in Gadsden, Alabama. So something is cooking, something is going on. I'm going to try to find out today.
Well, how close is Gadsden to the how close is it to the con? We got some background
noise.
Someone's got
a lot of noise.
Yeah, someone's got bad noise there.
Cindy?
Sorry,
mute your phone.
Me.
Mute your phone.
Yeah.
I don't know what you said. What did you say?
Oh, she was saying Gadsden, Alabama. Is that on the truck route? Is that on the convoy route at all? Is that a military base near the convoy route?
I'm not sure, but I know it's 5 hours from here. It's 2 hours from Birmingham, Alabama.
Probably not then. Because the convoys are going I-10.
I-10.
You know, so they're going to take I-10,
not
and then they're going to take, I think, 95 north. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty – but there's also trucks coming in from Ohio. They're coming in from Washington State.
Yeah.
There's like three or four different ways they're coming in. But what I'm still trying to do, in fact, Cindy, if we can get in touch with our Bikers for Trump folks, and as you're talking to people, you know, as you're going to Washington too, is we need to get those bills mm-hmm. on the websites. You know, we need to get those. In fact, I talked to GoDaddy this morning, who has our writeyourlaws.com. I think what happened was with Eric that he somehow put it under his own thing, and when he passed away, it took our website out for a while. So that should be back by now. Because I want it back the way he created, because he created something that is monumentally amazing. I couldn't do any of the work I'm doing now without that website. And so that's what I'm hoping. But if you can get, once we get that up and running again, if you can get those bills to people and we can get them on the websites, you know, and talk to the other truckers and just send them out and say, here, this is the answer to this question, censorship, illegal aliens, and vaccine liability. In fact, they also have things on energy and the wall, and I can, you know, I'm willing to work with anybody on that too. So if you actually, Cindy, if you get in touch, if you're getting in touch with any of the leaders, if you meet them, however you meet them in D.C., get them on the show. Mm-hmm. Get them calling in. Mm-hmm. Make a point. You book them. Book them yourself. I don't care. You know, I'll give you, you've got the schedule, I think. I think I sent you a schedule. Yeah,
you signed it. I haven't had a chance to look it over.
Oh, yeah, no problem, but I'll preempt. You got a guest in Washington, I'll preempt any reporter. Sorry, guys. You know, this is too important. You know, whenever you can call in is fine. We'll just work it in. Besides, whoever's on the show is probably going to want to hear from them anyway. But, yeah, this should be interesting. We'll get truckers talking to – our truckers talking – especially if Jen's on the line from Australia. It'd be great.
Yeah, she back now from her convoy?
Well, there's two of them. She did the first one a couple of weeks ago, and I think there's another one going up. But what she wants to do this time is have some kind of a framework for an Australian Bill of Rights in her hand to discuss with the other truck leaders, to discuss with, like I say, we've got lawyers and media people and friends of hers and folks that are going to be, you know, at some point taking a look at this, and then we'll wait and see. And the idea of writing an equivalent of a Federalist Papers or notes for each one of these explaining it, that's going to be a huge job. You know, it's hard enough to write them simply enough so that they are stated in Bill of Rights form with all the explanations, so they're not cumbersome. And then to sort of write explanations, that's going to be a job itself. That might take, you know, a few weeks to actually compile all that, because I got some pretty interesting ones. Yeah. Jeffy?
And, you know, Greg, this criminal running our country, which is Obama, they're going to try to do exactly what the communist Trudeau is doing in Canada with our truckers, but we will not allow it.
Mm-hmm.
We will not. This is America.
I hope that's the difference between us and Canada, that we have the foundation of freedom that Canada doesn't. I mean, certainly they're probably closest to us in the scheme of things, but ultimately, America is different, and if we don't stand up to protect what makes us different, we will become just like Canada.
Well, we actually are. Well, actually, no. Let me tell you what's going on, and I've known this for a while. A lot of people have. There are executive orders on the books. In fact, Senator Rand Paul just pointed this out the other day. Everything that Canada did, Brandon can do, and it's worse because he's not even a legal leader. You know, he stole the White House with the Democrats.
That's right.
But the executive has emerged, the president under the executive orders, the power they gave themselves, which of course is illegal. You know, no branch of government can give itself powers. All right. The Congress can make the laws, but they can't enforce them. The executive, you know, can enforce the laws, but they can't make them. And the Supreme Court can't interpret the Constitution, yet they do all those things. You know, but the point is there are executive orders on the books right now which could end the internet, which could control the natural resources. They could shut off the gas supply to all these people. They could do the same thing. The banks and the insurance companies, they could put all those truckers out of business. You know, everything that Canada did, where do you think they get these from? They all get them from the same sources. The totalitarians, the globalists, they all write the same emergency provisions for all countries. You don't know about it. You don't hear about it. But Brandon could very well do exactly the same thing. And then it's going to be up to the geldings in Congress to do something. And they won't, because they're geldings.
That's where I say to each American, are they willing to accept that? Are they willing to say that we think they shouldn't have the power that they apparently do to do what Canada did? Are we going to accept that now, knowing that they have given themselves that ability? That's what it's going to take. It's just like the mask. It can't be one or two people in a room of four saying, you know, we're not going to do that. It's got to be an American effort to say, we're not going to accept that. We're different.
No, we're not. We're not going to accept that. We have our Second Amendment, and that's the only thing that really, really protects the United States of America, the citizens, I should say, because the government
I don't
has get all
to
the
that.
Guns.
I know
have
we have them.
We have our Second Amendment, and we're going to stand against these criminals. They work for us, and they're trying to put a muzzle in our faces, in our homes. They have taken over our birthdays, our graduations, our weddings, our funerals. These people are criminal, and they will pay the price. It is coming up, and I guarantee you, we will arrest all of them. They're not going to get away. The Antifa, the Black Lives Matter are going to be begging at the end when they're all going to be round up and arrested.
Okay, I'm still
telling
waiting.
You.
Still waiting.
It's coming.
I'm waiting.
Soon.
Uh-huh.
Well,
yeah,
and that's the part of me that will encourage all of you that want to support the convoy efforts to make cash donations. I'm not ever one to promote that. I like transparency. Mm-hmm. I like to be able to remove any provision for people to use and abuse things. Because that happens in our country a lot, but it's going to take skirting the systems that we have in place to eliminate or at least minimalize the interventions that our government can do to stop this. And it's going to be uncomfortable for a while, but if we don't do it now, we're lost. This is it.
Well, and don't forget, Action Radio has a Give Fin Go account.
How do people make cash donations? I'm interested in making a donation and not contributing to no GoFundMe, of course. But
find the leader for a convoy in your area, and pass, seal an envelope, pass it on to them. I have always been the one to follow the rules, go with the flow, go along to get along until it seems so blatantly wrong. And in America, we're going to say that you're going to freeze someone's bank account because they're seeking redress from their government.
It's coming. They're going to try to do that to Americans. That's why I started getting a lot of my money out. I started buying houses because they're going to try to freeze the money to the American people, too. Oh, these people are criminal. They know game is over. So they're going to try to do everything that Canada and Castro and Venezuela is doing and Nicaragua, where I'm from. They're going to try to do everything to punish America. And look at what they're doing with the food. Look at what they're doing with all the containers coming from China or from other parts of the world. They're doing it on purpose. There's no reason for Americans to be with no chicken in the supermarkets or any type of other items that we need. This is all they want to punish the American people. A lot of the Democrats I heard, they're stepping down because they feel like these people are out of control. I know they were going along with all their scheme, but it is getting out of control. Some of the senators are scared because these people are talking about the EMP, that they want to freeze a lot of people up north to death, like Russia did in the Ukraine next to Crimea, a small little city there. Many people were dying because Russia shut the electricity, the gas, and the water about 7 years ago. I bought a building, which didn't cost me a lot, and we were hiding food, water, bread, medicine. We were sneaking our missionary friends in Ukraine. They were sneaking like small little vans full of items with $300. We could bring a lot. And in the middle of the night, these people were coming. Now we turn it into a small church. But let me tell you, I don't know what's going to happen because it's like 2 hours away from Russia, this small little church that I purchased for God. So last night I got a thing from my missionary leader about it. We don't know what's going to happen. But people are getting ready in the Ukraine because they don't know if this is real or not real. And I keep telling my friends in the Ukraine that this is all well organized by Obama and Bill Gates and China, because China wants to take over a lot of countries. This is what's happening. And a lot of Chinese are already in Canada, a lot of military Chinese also. They've been there for a while because they wanted to come and take over our country here. It is crazy. This is crazy, let me tell you. Americans need to prepare with water. Make sure you have your generator in case they cut the electricity completely. I believe we're going to be shut down for a couple weeks from the internet because the criminals, they don't want us to see what's going on. So they're going to shut Twitter, Facebook. They're going to shut everything themselves. That's why Donald Trump launches. Yeah,
you know, I'm still skeptical of these things, Josie. Listen, we got John. I'm gonna hold you up for a second because Jonathan's on the line.
Okay.
And let's find out what's going on. Are you at CPAC, Jonathan, or where are you?
Yeah, I am, and you don't necessarily have to cut that short because I just got here.
Okay.
So I'm
cool.
Supposed to be on the call with the court, but they haven't called in. But if she wants to continue, I have some thoughts.
Okay.
But don't let me interrupt you.
Okay, then we'll get a report from there. But I don't know how much time you had. Josie, did you want to continue? Do you have more on that?
Well, I know a lot of people. I've been telling different people for the last 6 years to prepare and all that. And even one of my friends, she said, oh, I think you're a little bit too much. And now she's singing a different tune. We have a lot of information that I cannot tell. Because of I don't want to get in trouble, but we know a lot what's coming, and the illegal government that we have right now, the fraud criminals organizing themselves because they want to take a lot more rights, not just putting us in a mask and giving us the deadly vaccines, but they want to do more than that because they've been planning this for over 20-something years to take over this country. And there's a lot of Cuban communists, Venezuelans, Chinese women. They've been running our cities and training a lot of our young kids in America how to be communists. So it's in full color. It's here. It's here. But Americans, since they obey laws, they want to follow rules and all that, they're not. Good people, good American people are not like these criminals. But these criminals, they've been getting away for years and years and years that they don't think, they can get away with it. But not this time. This is totally different. It is time to stop the cabal, and we are bringing them down 100%. You will see that we're going to be so happy, but we are going to go through storms. I will say at least a couple weeks worth of no good in the streets, supermarkets shut down completely. It's going to be a mess for at least a couple weeks.
I have to hold you up because I've heard that exact same thing for a couple of years now, and I've heard I just don't believe it. I'm not saying we're not going to have problems and hassles and things, but I don't think everybody's all going to be arrested at once. I don't think the military is going to take over tribunals. I don't think I'm just going to disagree with you. You know,
but
I love having you on the show, and I love
I,
your opinions. But I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong on this.
It's not
and,
an opinion; it's the truth.
Okay. Well, I still, I'm still waiting for one of those things to happen that you've talked about and predicted. You know, I'm not trying to get on your case here, but it doesn't seem logical or rational to wait this long to do something, considering everything this country is going through. As I said before, the price is
That's
too
okay.
high. If they're waiting for some magic moment to do something, they're about 2 years too late.
Yeah.
You know, they should have stopped. They should have stopped
though,
this November 4th. Yeah.
I think the movement with the convoys is going to be a 21st century Woodstock. I don't think this is going to be a weak effort and everybody goes home. I think it's going to be a revolving process of a span of time, and the repercussions of what that does, you know, it's probably going to bring some inconvenience to people, but we do need to look at it as, you know, a Woodstock. It is to involve the masses to affect change.
Okay. See, here's the thing too, that you got to translate that into action. This is where the citizen legislature comes in. We've got the bills to bring about that change. We've already written them. We can write more. I can write them with the truckers on the show. And it doesn't involve a protest in Washington. I mean, that's a great way to coalesce and get people gathered around the issue. But what's really important is the follow-up afterwards. The follow-up of everybody sending the bills to Washington that are going to bring about that change, and to the state legislatures and the local governments. Everybody can be a lobbyist. We can turn this whole nation into a nation of lobbyists from their computer or their cell phone. But they have
and
to
I
do
think
that. And people don't understand that. Yeah.
If you don't have people willing, the people making the decisions willing to accept that legislation, you're just sitting at your keyboard. It's going to take inconvenience to stop the everyday process that's going on in Washington and force them to accept legislation.
Well, I mean, part of that is in the election. You make they make the campaign about those issues. You make the campaign about those bills. That's what they're doing in Australia.
That's where I disagree with you. Our elections, those in themselves are questionable.
Well,
and
of course they are.
If there are efforts in place to turn out an election for an agenda, you can vote all you want at election day, but it's not going to change things.
Well, there's still the campaign, there's still the media, there's still the questions, and there's still the issues. And if we can make if the truck convoy, I think the best thing they can do is to make the laws the issues and the solutions.
And I know that's the goal of the convoy that we're going with. That is their focus. It's to present legislation, but it comes with, you know, this is not going away until you act on this legislation. We
Sounds
can give
to
it to them all they want. And
well, you know, on the enacted on the see, you got a problem here. Now, what she said is right. You can present that to those people in Congress, but if they don't have the interpretude to a response in a positive way, it's only one or other alternative. You got to get rid of them. And replace them with somebody that's going to carry out things as you wish, especially when it comes down to pushing legislation that you want to have pushed.
Yeah. It's more important to present the bills to the public and to the media first before Congress. I mean, you do them all at the same time, but the real emphasis is to educating people, and it's educating the media to educate people. That's where the real thrust is going to come from. That's where the campaign issue is going to be created.
I agree.
And that's where it's going to have an effect. And I mean, the legislature is the last place you go. It's not the first place. It's the last place. Because you already have to have the momentum built up before you get there. Anyway, I want to get to Jonathan because he's been on hold here for
a while. Yeah. And of course, you got a little bit of noise here, but I got in the background.
That's okay.
You know, I've been involved in conservative politics since 1984 when I helped with the reelection of
that's an appropriate year.
84 and who is this? So it seems to me like we have to do everything, and there's always been a desire to find the one silver bullet to the exclusion of all others, and I think that's a mistake, and it's partly I think been because so few Americans have been involved, and that's changing. Now, this big wave of people involved need to be trained. They need to be focused. But everybody's always been debating, we need to do this. Oh, no, we need to do that. And my evaluation, we need to do everything. And that sounds overwhelming, but it's true.
No,
and
I agree.
And, for example,
people, media,
example,
and legislators. Yeah, all three.
When Newt Gingrich, you know, and they won, I think, 50 seats in the 1994 election, they put forth a contract with America telling the American people and giving a clear message to the media, here's what we're going to do. And, of course, they never did it again, but they did that. And I think that if you – and then remember Grover Norquist, gave the pledge. He said that he had one tax issue, basically, no net new taxes. And he got all the candidates in a race, because what they do is they all pretend to be the conservative and they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
So he would get them to sign the pledge and saying that if you're elected, you promise to do this. And so I don't think you can separate putting the legislation in front. And because if you just go to your legislatures and you ask a bunch of vague questions, they're going to give you a bunch of vague promises.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be able to say, will you support this bill? Now, they might not, and they probably won't want to, and they'll probably squirm and, say if it's, what will the Washington Post say? But you have to have something sharp and focused to nail them with. But it's true. If they don't support it, it's not going to happen. But I think
the encouragement for them to support it comes with some inconvenience in mass numbers of people pressuring them to accept it.
Absolutely. Let's say the conservative movement, going back before I was involved to the 70s with Phyllis Schlafly, was always a tiny minority of Americans who actually would interrupt their lives to care and get involved. And we've always operated on a principle of scarcity, that we didn't have enough troops to get anything real done. And to the extent that people are waking up and getting involved, we're now getting into a position where we can actually do what needs to be done. But then we've got waves of people, like I say, who are just new and they don't need how to work, and they need to be trained and educated and mature. But if we don't have these mass numbers, there's no solution.
Yeah.
And so
it's all three.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's all three. You got to
have
people.
Is a great St. Louisan, by the way.
Yeah, I have an experiment for you, Jonathan. If you have a couple of minutes and you're feeling daring, would you like an experiment, Jonathan?
Yeah, what's that?
Well, when I was at CPAC 2018, all the media was in the back of the big hall. They had a huge, auditorium, speakers. That's where Trump spoke. That's where all the big speakers speak. Are you anywhere near that right now?
Yeah, I'm actually behind Real America's Voice. Yeah, I found a quiet little alcove.
Okay. Are you anywhere near One America News?
No, I haven't seen
them yet. You can interview them.
Yeah.
Well, I want to put them on the air right now. This is my experiment. So what I'm hoping you'll do,
I don't. They're all.
What? Go ahead.
They're all.
Brave.
No, they're all.
This is your channel.
They're all broadcasting right now. They're all talking about China and Russia right now.
Okay.
I don't think I can get their attention. Real America's Voice has Gordon Chang talking, the China expert. And
I know him. He's been on the show. I know Gordon. I met him at CPAC.
It probably takes more smoothing to get through to them.
All right. Well, I just wonder if one of the reporters was not broadcasting at this particular moment, Pearson Sharp, Christina Bob, or Dan Ball, the three folks I've been writing to constantly and sending press releases to, if you can reach any one of them and then see if they want to come on the air tomorrow.
Yet.
Okay. All right. If you want to do it now, that's fine. Let's talk to them today, some point, and see if you can book them for tomorrow, anytime during our 3 hours, 7 to 10. And tell them.
All right, I'll let them know. So yeah.
Yeah, you can represent.
But I wanted to talk about some of these things from a constitutional issue and everything. It actually sort of blends into the somewhat off the beaten track legal thing that I wanted to do about the Insurrection Act.
Okay.
And again, in my analysis, because I've been blessed to be taught a lot by a lot of people. Who knew American history and things like that, and including the church that I was part of, we taught a lot about these things. And, I am convinced that January 6th was December 16th, 1773.
Hmm.
That was the Tea Party, the actual real Boston Tea Party.
Okay.
And things didn't happen. It took from December 1773 until July 2nd, I guess it was signed, 1776. Before it all came together. And one of the things I was taught was that people really tried to avoid a fight. They tried every possible way to work this out, work it out with the administration, the Crown's administration in the New World, send delegations and letters to to the Crown in London, and they would, you know, they said, well, we already asked him. Like, we'll ask him again. Mm-hmm. And they went through all this stuff, but the building of awareness. And see, this is one of the things that I learned, is that the, you know, the Boston activists were considered hotheads. And if you'd ask them, it's like, yeah, we are, because everybody else is so, you know, slow. And so they were trying to educate the people by through activities and you know, dramatic symbols, and get the rest of the colonies out of their slumber. Yep. And the rest of the colonies were looking at them with suspicion, saying, you're going to get us into a war. And like, well, yeah, we hope so. And and so, it really was. In fact, somebody told me last July, I heard on the radio, that there was an organizing effort associated with that. But people went, you know, what we would call door to door, and got commitments, you know, from like grassroots campaigning, house to house, to support a revolution. I don't know very much about that, but I was surprised to hear that on the radio last July 4th when I went up to Philadelphia. And so, you know, it all was necessary. But that's why I say that I believe we're in 1774 right now. The analogy is to the American Revolution. I mean, it's, you know, it's not, we can't give up. And but maybe we're not there yet in terms of, you know, are we going to put up with this stuff? I mean, too many people are willing to just take the kids to school and make peanut butter sandwiches and not really, and think it's going to be okay. And they have to come to the point where they realize it's not going to be okay. you know, absolute power corrupts, you know, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we are no longer the Norman Rockwell painting America, because we allowed these people to be corrupt and be, you know, abuse their power for so long that they no longer think we're going to do anything, because we haven't. And so, I think it's all necessary, and everything has to happen. And, you know, like the trucker, I mean, I think the Canadian convoy, and hopefully the trucker convoy, and I think it's slowly waking people up. And, you know, I think it's waking people up faster than the frog is boiling in the pot. And I think that the left dramatically overplayed their hand, because it's what they do. They're emotional. They're radical. They believe that everybody, you know, agrees with them, and they're nuts. And so they've drastically overplayed their hands. And we went from January 6th to the you know, threatening parents at school boards, and, you know, and de-licensing, you know, taking the license of the medical doctors. And this is slow. I believe this is slowly changing ordinary Americans' opinions, and, you know, God willing, it'll reach a tipping point.
I think the more people it affects, the more likely we are to build momentum. So the tighter they squeeze, and the more far-reaching what they're doing impacts everyday people, is what it's going to take to get them involved and seeing, you know, numbers of people that they can join is what's going to need to happen to build that momentum.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's obvious that the United States. It's quite obvious that the United States is the last bastion of freedom that those who's against freedom want to see fall.
Yeah.
You know, Jonathan, we're the only country in the world in the way from radical communist left trying to be dictators. We're in the way, the United States, because of our Second Amendment. If we didn't have our Second Amendment, we would like the rest of the countries. But we just have to prepare, even though Greg disagreed with me. It's nothing wrong to prepare with all this.
I don't disagree with that. That's not a good thing.
It's like a hurricane. You prepare. If the hurricane doesn't hit, well, I hope I was wrong, you know. But at least prepare. That's all I can say, and pray for our country.
That's not what I disagree with at all. What I disagree with
is the idea that
all of a sudden we're going to have this massive sweep, and all these people, we're waiting to gather evidence. We're going to prosecute all these people.
Well,
if they were going to do any good at all, you know, Durham would have done it 6 months before the election. He didn't. He's part of the deep state.
Durham,
Bill Barr,
Durham
part
is,
of the deep state.
Durham is done with. Durham is done with all his investigation. He's finished. And Donald Trump is about 80% done with what they're supposed to be doing. They're almost done. But we believe the people that we're in touch with, it's going to be dragging till October, November. That's too long, but we just have to be patient.
Well, right before the midterms or after the midterms?
Yeah. Probably before. Yeah.
Okay.
So, but
I don't, that's where I disagree. I think it's going to take the people to take back the country. It's not going to be our president, a new president. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the people.
Which raises the question of how. The big question is how. How do the people take the country back?
I think introducing legislation and putting pressure on them to accept new legislation, because that's how
and
that
also
is how they're
civil disobedience.
Yes, yes, exactly. Civil non-compliance, peaceful non-compliance,
I agree.
And that comes with inconvenience, and Americans need to embrace that. And I think that's why we're losing, because they're not. As long as, like Jonathan said, as long as they're able to take their kids to school and go to work and come home and keep their nose to the ground, it's not affecting them, and there's no reason to. But as they extend these draconian measures that you think America, or at least I have thought America, is immune from because we are different, the more we see us mirror other countries, the more it's going to affect more Americans, and they're going to stand up.
And there, in fact, lies another problem that you are fueling and turning around and fighting. It's when you take your children to these government schools.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the reasons why you don't have more of an outcry, because the people in that period of elementary education onward, they was never taught what you're trying to get the response out of them today. They just can't conceive it. And it's gotten down to beyond a law. They utilize what they think is right and wrong. Right and wrong is subjective. It's a law that you have to follow.
But is right and wrong subjective? that's where we have moral codes. That's where we have laws. That's where we have, the Ten Commandments. That's where we have a basis for our society. Is it that subjective? That's where I would question it. Now, I think I'm really glad for what Cindy said, that that legislation, that citizen legislation, is the way to go. See, the problem always before with protests is the protests have demanded that the politicians do something. Well, then they don't. So what are you going to do? So the whole point of citizen legislation is that we basically do their job for them and say, here, we've already written this out. Now, it's still up to them to consider and go through committee hearings and do the normal legislative process. But at least you have something that people can come to and say, well, this is what they can do. Instead of saying, when they say, well, we're doing the best we can, I say, well, actually, this is better. We've already done the work. We've already
and
done
that's no longer acceptable.
Exactly.
Doing the best we can is no longer acceptable.
Exactly, which is the point of what we do here. And so if you can then go to them and go to Washington and go to the media and go to the talk show host, the best thing people can do is call all the conservative talk show hosts, quite honestly, and tell them, look, there's something out there. We've got bills. We're all set to go. We'd like to get these before the public. We want to show you and tell you what they are and what they do. They're very simple to understand. Here are the key lines. I'm going to underline them. In fact, I just, while we're sort of doing things and talking, I checked the Write Your Laws website. I was trying to work with GoDaddy before to have it restored. They restored the old one. So I got to go scream at them after the show and get the new one back. So I don't know what they've done, but they've messed up everything. Apparently, Eric, when he left us, turned off our website somehow. So we're going to have to do some things with that. So I can't even help you guys with our legislation yet, to take to Washington until I get that web set up, which I'll talk to you about. But the idea of citizen legislation, that here is a bill, here is a simple solution. It's not all lawyered to death. And it's not, sorry, Jonathan. Jonathan's actually left us too for his court case, his court phone call. Hopefully he'll be back. We'll see what happens. But anyway, point being, actually, Josie left too. So it's just Bianchi and you, Cindy, and me for the next little bit here. But the difference with this rally over every other rally that's ever taken place is you're going with legislation in your hand. And you're going saying, here is a solution that we consent to. You know, of course, if people don't consent, that's up to them too. I mean, you know, I wonder how that's going to work out, because basically I'm writing a lot of this stuff. And hopefully people are consenting to it and going, yeah, that's a good idea. And then because then we get the consensus of the truckers, you know, the leaders approve it, the rank and file truckers go, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Now we've got a real consensus and people go, yes, I want this replacement. I want product liability on vaccine makers. I want it this way. Here it is. That's very different. And then it becomes a whole issue of, then the reporters can ask the politicians, well, do you support vaccine product liability as written here in this bill? Mm-hmm. That puts them, they've never been in that position. So you're going to break some new ground here. You have the potential to as lobbyists with a bill in hand, you're just as powerful as Big Pharma. Actually, more so because you've got more people, which means more votes.
I think that's the objective of this convoy is, while we don't have maybe the financial backing, if we have enough people, enough citizen legislators involved to pressure to hold them to a standard, that allows us to compete with these lobbyists that are, you know, paying and funding the decisions that these people make. We've got to fight in numbers, not with dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea. What Converging on D.C. is meant to accomplish, is to bring the numbers of people participating and saying, okay, this is no longer acceptable. We're going to do things differently, and here's a way to do that. We don't have the money to do it, but we do have the citizenry saying enough is enough.
Yeah. And if it becomes a teach-in on citizen legislation, where you educate the media and the talk show hosts, and then they educate, you know, they make it a big issue, then the politicians have to respond. That's how it's going to go. That's why I always knew politicians were the last step, not the first step, even though I send them the stuff early in advance. I know, for example, Senator Johnson has seen our bills on reforming the Food and Drug Administration, you know, the bill I wrote with Dr. Zelenko, on the EUA, the Emergency Use Authorization Procedure. I know he's seen it, okay? I can't tell you how I know, but I know. I know he's seen our bill on vaccine product liability. I know, and he's the forefront of he's the good guy, okay?
And I'm guessing this proves my point. I'm guessing he saw it and you know, placed it in his trash can because he didn't have enough people saying, I want you to do something with this. I want you to pay attention. We're here to make change. Mm-hmm. That's where the convoy comes in.
Yep.
The Woodstock
convoy
of legislation.
Yeah. But he, you're exactly right. He needs the convoy. He needs the media to be asking everybody else why they're not doing it. Then he can come out in support of it. We need to make it easy for him to support it. Okay.
Well, and I think the media is part of the problem as well, because they don't want it any more than you know, these legislators want it, because there's not enough people holding them accountable and saying this is what we want.
Yeah, we shouldn't have to hold the media accountable. That's kind of counter.
No.
That's counter to their purpose. We actually do.
But
and we'll see what Jonathan can do with the folks tomorrow. Maybe he'll get some Newsmax. I'll talk to him off the air, see if we can get some Newsmax people. But the point is, if he can get any of those major media people on the show tomorrow, that's huge. That's a big inroad. Let's see who's willing to do it. Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll be talking to him. If you're listening, Jonathan, you know, when you're done with court and saving people's lives, you know, come back and go. You know,
yeah, getting them out of jail.
Oh, yeah. Well, he could be huge, too, because, A, he's there. You know, he's in Virginia. You know, so he's right next to the swamp. So you guys are in touch on our group chat. So feel free to chat off the air and see if you can coordinate something. And let's make it a teach-in. You know, in fact, and that's the idea of it being a teach-in would be really good, because how is Brandon going to object to a teach-in? It's not a rally. It's not a threat. It's a teach-in. You should teach people about it. Here's our solution. These are the solutions we're offering. That puts you different than every other rally that's ever been. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Pianki,
well,
how are we doing?
You do, you got to have people. A politician is the voice of people.
Mm-hmm.
People have to be behind them. Those people would have been out of jail if you had mobs of people outside demanding their release a long time ago.
Yep. But I believe, you know, the media and our administration has been successful at villainizing them in the public eye so that the masses don't feel that's needed, that it's not justified to fight and get them out of jail.
Yeah. Is that part of the rally?
Well, you're absolutely right.
I don't see it on the website, so I'm wondering if that's a part of it. Have you guys talked about that? Making, you know, free the D.C. Gulag prison, the political prisoners, you know, part of the rally?
It's not anything I've heard of, but I'm not privy to a lot of the, you know, the minutiae.
Yeah.
I know the Keystone Pipeline is huge. That's COVID, the COVID mandates and the pipeline are two huge issues to focus on.
Well, it makes sense to me. You know, I mean,
yeah.
The energy is huge. Well, these are truckers. They depend on energy. They depend on,
yeah.
on affordable fuel. So, of course, diesel. Of course, that's
yeah.
going to be huge. You know, but and of course, the jobs, the union guys. And again, you know, if you want a theme, you know, workers of the world unite. We did.
Mm.
Mm. That's what the left keeps saying. So there are all kinds of good themes we can use in this. But it's going to be. It's really, you know, I would call it a teach-in. I wouldn't even call it a rally. You know, I'll talk to Bernadette about this, Bernadette and RC, who are working with the convoy leaders. And let's see if we can get it to be a teaching and talk about the legislation. Now, do you know anything that you can tell me? You may not want to tell me on the air, but do you know anything about any kind of presentation of the legislation to either media or Congress? Do you know what's going on with that? Is that public
yet? I know
yet,
there are appointments being made to meet with congressional leaders on, I believe it's the 8th and the 9th. They'll have delegates from the convoy that are making appointments to meet with them and present the legislation.
Perfect. That's perfect. Yeah, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's good to know. Nobody tells me that. I just write the bills and it's like, okay, now what happens? Feel free. Keep me informed. You know, like I said, I wish I could be there. I'd love to be
Well, and I'm usually the last to know anything, so there's a lot that I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're second last now. I'm the last.
I've been promoted.
Yeah, exactly. See, you keep working on this stuff, you never know what's going to happen. But you're going to be our eyes and ears in Washington, and so you'll be reporting. You know, we got Jonathan at CPAC, we got you at the DC rally. This is pretty cool. I'll be waiting to go by on the 5th. Hi guys, have fun. You know, don't forget your legislation. You know,
yeah,
read your laws.
And I do want to clarify. Yeah. I know that there are several efforts going to DC, and there's some confusion that's gone along with that. There are several approaches to what's happening in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those convoys is en route to D.C. I don't know what their intentions are to affect change when they get to D.C. They're getting up there, I believe, the 27th. The convoy that our family is going with and that I know is presenting legislation is coming through the Milton, Escambia, Santa Rosa County area on March 5th. They're leaving
yep.
out of California on the 2nd
mm-hmm.
And will arrive outside of D.C. on the night of the 6th, and then meetings with legislators start on the 8th and 9th.
It's going to be fascinating. It's going to be absolutely fascinating. Let me get my calendar. Reaching back over here. There we go. I'm kind of curious to see when those...
Need to have that separate... There needs to be them separate ballots on federal election day.
Mm.
Well, you can
because
give that
everything
to,
we said about the transparent and free election is not going. You're not going to get all 50 states to fall in line. It just ain't going to happen.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. And
so you
got to
have this separation.
Once people start looking at our bills, if they look at those three bills, the big ones, illegal alien, in fact, we should have something with a Keystone. I mean, you can write one. You know, I could write one. We could run very easily, you know, revoking Brandon's executive order, you know, putting the Keystone pipeline back. That can be done. You know, so
well,
there's simple, you know. Yeah, go ahead.
I know legislation is being drafted because this convoy is aligned with, it's actually supported by the Great American Patriot Project, which is a political action committee.
I talk to them too. Are they,
yeah.
have they read our bills? Or what are they doing exactly? Because this is
I believe they have, if you've provided them to Bernadette.
Yeah, I did.
Okay,
well, I sent
yeah,
a press then, release. Then, I sent a press release. Everybody's got them. She definitely has that. Okay, so I'll talk to Brandon about that.
So, yeah, the effort to present them legislation is mm-hmm. being coordinated through this political action committee.
Okay. Interesting. This is getting all fun. All the cool things we're able to do now.
Well, I think that's what I want to convey to people, that at least I know the convoy that we're participating with, our objective is not just to go there and shut things down. Mm-hmm. It's to possibly inconvenience things, but present them with a solution. Mm-hmm. And the solution is going to be doing things different and legislatively making changes.
Well, they've got a place for the bills. There's, if you look at the website, AmericanTruckersFreedomFund.com, which is where everything is apparently centered,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I can see the Great American Patriot Project at the bottom. I'll take a look into them. But this,
yeah.
What they do, they have here under About Us, which is way down on the bottom left, next to the woman in the big red truck, and then it has Peaceful Expression, and then it has a section that says, many truckers and convoys are also participating to reopen the Keystone Pipeline, reinstate oil and gas production domestically. Next bullet point, reclaim national energy independence. Third one, fight against big tech government censorship. That's one of our bills. Okay, secure the southern border. I don't have a bill against that, but if you remove illegal aliens, they're not going to secure the southern border. As long as Brandon's illegally occupying the White House, you're not going to get that. But the states and local governments can start doing civil asset forfeiture against illegal aliens and force them out of their counties and states. And they'll all gravitate towards the communist states. Fight against agricultural regulations that disproportionately affect farmers. I don't know anything about that. I think that's something that the farmers and the truckers, I'll work with them to write it. We got another one here. Fight against big pharma control over independent liberty. I'm not sure what that means exactly, but the other one, reinstate liability to pharmaceutical companies for vaccine damage and death. That's my bill.
Yeah.
So three of these, 3 of these 7, we already got bills for, and some of them kind of overlap. We've got illegal aliens, big pharma, and censorship. They're covered. So we've got three of the big issues already covered. So hopefully this Great American Patriot Project, obviously I have to talk to them, and we'll see what I can find on them, and away we go. Huh.
So
okay.
Support them. We need everyday Americans to, if you can't be there in person, support them financially. This
Support
is
Action Radio.
Be
Don't forget us.
A long haul. It's yeah. not going to be a 2 or 3 day event.
Yeah. And Support Action Radio. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's, I don't know. I can take a break right now and we can play a couple things here, Santa Rosa Volunteers and things. Then we can come back and kind of finish up the show. I didn't know where we were going to go today. I was hoping Jonathan would hang around for a little more. Maybe he'll be back when we get back. But let's do it right now. A couple of breaks here and back in a little bit. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal,
that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. Helps if I unmute my mic. There we go. Let me start again. So where else can you write a Bill of Rights for Australia, being on the cutting edge of freedom for an entire nation? Where else can you help, you know, change the way rallies are done in the United States so that it becomes a teach-in, a legislative teach-in for people actually bringing legislation to Congress in form that it can be submitted directly? Where else can you do that? And, you know, all in one show, all in one day. We're accomplishing a lot today. It's a big day. Who wants to hop in here? We got Cindy, we got Peggy. And Cindy, if you have to leave, just make sure we get your contact information for your group before we go.
I can stay till 9 today.
Oh, cool. Perfect. Okay. That's Central Time, folks, for those of you listening live. I can stay till 9, too, which works out great. But this is kind of overwhelming, all the things that we're taking on here. But again, I've been mentally prepared for this because this is what I was hoping would happen. But I had no idea it was going to happen the way it's happening. You know, this whole idea of COVID, the complete suppression of rights, this government taking over everything and the people complying so quickly, you know, just giving up everything, land of the free, home of the brave, until the government says you have to wear a mask and keep your kids out of school and don't go to the parks. What? You know, my question is, would this have happened 50 years ago? I don't think it would have. I think people would have screamed and yelled. We tried doing this in the 60s, for example.
I agree. I think we've been lulled into submission through our educational system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You're actually fighting this from the wrong end.
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting it from the results of the educational system rather than constructing the education system to derive the results that you seek.
And I tell you, Pianke, just hearing that, it actually gives me anxiety when I look at it that way, because that's the part of me that says this is a generational change, a generational fix, because it is going to have to come from our education system.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is not going to happen overnight. And looking back, I have realized over, you know, the course of my lifetime, the thought process that has changed, and it's come out of the education system, but it didn't happen overnight. It's been over the course of my life, and that is, it's exasperating to think, is that how long it's going to take to right this ship?
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know the old cliche, you can't teach a new dog new tricks.
Mm.
Well, that's exactly what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
You have some old dogs out here who's a product of, and now
mm-hmm.
you're trying to change their course of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, damn near impossible to do.
Yeah.
Well, we run into that every day with Action Radio, you know, especially when I tell new people, and they're like, you do what? You know, nobody understands this because we're creating it. And so that's a big part of the battle. If we can get the truckers to see the value of citizen legislation, then anybody can. And not that the truckers are any less than anybody else. I'm saying that as a group, you know, this would be an amazing accomplishment to have these folks do that, because they could write bills in their spare time. I mean, who knows where they could be? They could be, sitting in the cab at night, you know, after a long day's driving. You know what? We need to get ethanol out of our gasoline. Let's get a bill that affects Archer Daniels Midland, and let's stop this ethanol crap subsidy. Jonathan's back. So what's going on? And now from CPAC, Direct to Action Radio, Jonathan Mosley. Take it away, Jonathan.
Okay. Well, what's going on is my trial is set for May 31. But anyway, I'm at the court. But
okay.
I apologize. I couldn't see where you are in the conversation. I was going to.
Oh, don't worry about it. No. What kind of trial?
Transition a bit to the.
Can you say if it's one of the
oh,
Trump people in the gulag or what?
It's just a remodeling dispute.
Oh, okay.
But the trials that really matter. I just sat down. I'm having eggs Benedict in my father's honor, and checked my email, and I found one of the other attorneys saw the same thing I did last night. Both of us on the airplane. It deals with. You know, if you want to go with an update, I don't know where I'm jumping all over the place from what you were just talking about.
No, we've covered everything. You know, it's your turn.
All right,
so throw us an update.
Although,
yeah.
of course, we are seeing that Putin is not corn pop, if you know the Biden thing. But anyway, that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
But so the thing is that, as you know, on January 12th,
mm-hmm.
the grand jury dealing with the January 6th defendants indicted a bunch of people, including Stuart Rhodes, who had not previously been indicted, with seditious conspiracy, and added this new claim. And everybody's saying, well, why wouldn't that include Donald Trump, which, of course, has always been their dream. And then they arrested Stuart Rhodes on the 13th, and Ed Vallejo, another guy who's out there, and then released the transcript that had been previously that's what they do, is they'll seal the transcript until they arrest the person. And so then what was the date? Shoot. About a week ago. I think it was the 18th. The same judge is sitting on the civil lawsuits because they're so similar. In fact, they're identical. The civil lawsuits are just designed to taint the jury pool and make sure the criminal convictions get done. So they've got probably like seven lawsuits now that are all just carbon copies of impeachment too. And they're the same lawsuit, but just filed in different ways by different people against different people. So Judge Maida decided the motion to dismiss in one of those lawsuits, the one brought by the congressman. And in his opening page, and I want to be a little bit careful about this, because in his opening page, he Judge Emmett Mehta of the U.S. District Court of the District of Columbia declared everybody guilty. Not a single witness has been called. Not a single piece of paper has been admitted into evidence. And the judge has already declared that he's already made up his mind. And he described what happened. Now, to be a little bit fair, not entirely, is that normally on a motion to dismiss, a judge says, you know, reminds everybody that the allegations are assumed to be true. We pretend that everything is true in order to decide whether or not there's enough law there to continue with the case. So it is the normal thing to say, let's pretend that everything that the lawsuit alleges is true, and then let's go from there. But he doesn't say that. He starts out in page one in the introduction declaring everybody guilty, saying this is what happened, this is what everybody did, and so from that and from some of the interior things, everybody is saying the judge has declared, in effect, that Trump is guilty the same as everybody else, because the rationale for his declaration of guilt would apply the same to Trump as to anyone else. Now, part of the motion to dismiss was that Trump said that, A, he didn't say anything that would justify claiming a conspiracy, and secondly, he's immune, which was, whatever. He denied that. That'll go all the way up they might have to try to wake up the Supreme Court, stir them from their slumber and see if they'll wake up and take the case on presidential immunity, but they won't. And then the other question is, he didn't say anything. So the judge dismissed Rudy Giuliani, who actually said the worst things at the speech at the Ellipse on January 6th. And he dismissed Eric Trump Jr. because he said that he said that what he said didn't qualify. But he did not dismiss Donald Trump because of what he said, which also did not qualify as a conspiracy. And the reasoning in the hearing was so bizarre that basically anybody who heard, I think I mentioned this last year, anybody who heard Donald Trump's speech from the Ellipse anywhere on planet Earth, who then took any action to agree with it, would be part of the conspiracy. So if someone was in Romania listening over the internet and they, told somebody in America, oh, you should go to this, then they're part of the conspiracy. I mean, I emphasize that is how goofy the legal theory is. And so both David Fisher, who represents Thomas Caldwell, the attorney, and me, was flying last night reading these things, and he just told me over the email, he just independently came to the same conclusion that we now know what the sedition conspiracy is. I should back up and say that the defense attorneys have been trying for close to a year to say, well, what was the conspiracy? What did they agree to? When did they agree to it? Who was in the conspiracy? The prosecutors won't tell us. We don't have to tell you. I'm sorry, I'm a CPAC. It's noisy.
It's just funny that the secret evidence, the secret trial, the secret charges, this is so illegal, and you know it's illegal. I mean, but it's just for anybody mm-hmm. that knows anything about judicial proceedings, the idea that you have secret charges, secret evidence, and a judge that decides ahead of time the results of the case, I mean, they all need to be arrested or at least impeached and thrown out. The lawyers need to be disbarred, and the judge needs to be impeached and removed.
What I would think. And we'll be moving to recuse the judge and change venue. We've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so here's what we realized is that although they remember on January 12th, they had a grand jury hearing, and they this has been very sloppy because they keep building. They've had now 8 different indictments, and they don't agree. And darn well, I'm going to point that out to the jury thing that they can't make up their mind. But then on January 12th, they added the seditious conspiracy charge. And we're looking at the testimony in the grand jury, which, I can't give you some details, but the FBI special agent is presenting documents And it's clear, it suddenly struck me that what the exact conspiracy is. Because they admit, as they do again, that the Oath Keepers came to D.C. to provide protective security details for speakers at the, you know, at the various events. And again, the day before, you know, the day they indicted seditious conspiracy, the grand jury was reminded that the reason they came here was to help with the rallies. They did not come here to overthrow the government. They did not do any such thing. And they knew it, you know, and the government has known it all along, and they've got evidence, and they reminded the grand jury of it in these different text messages. But Stuart Rhodes published two open letters to the president, and those are public. You know, they're not just grand jury secret information because they were on his website. They were public, asking Donald Trump to invoke the Insurrection Act. And which is kind of interesting. And
well,
clues
against who? Against who, though?
That's true, too. That's a problem.
Yeah.
But the problem is, and this is where David Fisher just emailed me when I sat down while I was off the air with the court.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the same conclusion. Number
which
one,
is?
The conspiracy is to get somebody else to do something. So they conspired for somebody who's not part of the conspiracy to do something. That doesn't make – secondly, they're asking – the conspiracy is for Trump to do something perfectly legal. Because like it or not, goofy or not, you know, you listen to some of the tape recordings, they sound really bad. They sound like, you know, extremist, nutty, things like that. But it is a law. Congress passed the law. Don't like it? Sorry, you know, cry me a river. You guys over in Congress, you passed this law. So don't tell me you cannot conspire to do something that's legal.
Mm.
A conspiracy has to be an agreement to do something that's illegal.
So when they say invoke the Insurrection Act, or they said they want, it seems like Stuart Rhodes wanted to call for the Insurrection Act to be invoked to prevent an insurrection by Brandon.
Yes.
Okay. And
fact,
crew.
Right.
Yeah, that's
but he wasn't very clear.
But that's still but perhaps. Being stupid about you know your actions is not a crime. I mean, not being you know having clarity to understand that Antifa and Black Lives Matter adjuncts to the Democrat Party, you know the gelding Republicans, you know in there too. That is the conspiracy. That is the insurrection. You know, we know that from the evidence. But now, can you put Ray Epps up there if you want to talk conspiracy and some of the other people? Is that where he would come in or no?
Yeah.
Or is that premature?
Well, that's what Brad Guyer is working on, the other attorney.
Okay.
And I'm a little – he is investigating what really happened. I'm concerned that the judge will never let us get into what really happened.
Mm.
You know, we'll never get a chance to he'll never allow that whole discussion.
Well, that's
but
the
how
media.
Can he prevent
that,
it?
That should go to media then.
He'll rule it. He'll rule it irrelevant, because you know. Cause
oh,
the
real insurrections are. Wait a minute. The real insurrections are relevant to the false insurrection they're trying to perpetrate. That he says people are already guilty of. Have I got that right?
Yeah, because you know to start with, the idea that one person committed a crime doesn't necessarily mean that somebody else didn't also. For example, I'm trying to get the grand jury information. And I put all these information, and I'm going to add this new stuff to it, that one of the things is they accused the Oath Keepers of depredation of federal property, which right off the bat you go, like, what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. And it's not defined in the statute what depredation is. In our historical documents, I think there's reference to depredation, meaning just being insulting, like the crown was, or burdensome. So, but in another case, the same government accused somebody else, Hunter Emke, of breaking the same window at one, 15 minutes earlier. So I think they're trying to sell the same horse over and over and over again, saying, look, everybody broke this window, which is, of course, nonsense. And they really responded. They responded in their opposition to my motion for grand jury information that the fact that Hunter Emke broke the window at 2:15 p.m. does not mean that the Oath Keepers didn't break it, or Kelly Meigs didn't break it 15 minutes later. That's the level of this prosecution. And
wow.
And the thing is, to make it worse, none of these guys are actually accused. I mean, they are accused of me indicting, but the government admits none of them committed any violence. None of them assaulted any police officers. And none of them broke any property, but they aided and abetted other people. Well, how do you aid and abet the breaking of a window 15 minutes after it happened? And yet this is what they're saying with a straight face. It's in writing. And they're saying it, I think, partly because they know the judge has their back.
Mm.
You know, they're not, the judge is not going to hold them account.
Have you established a connection between the judge and the lawyers? Or do they all, you know, do lunch together?
No, right. You'll never.
In the same club or, you know, I mean, is there, okay, well, but this is what it sounds like. Do they all work for the Justice Department at some point?
No. The thing is, you don't need, I mean, if everybody is of the same mindset, they never actually have to talk to each other.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, that makes sense. So that is, in fact, a conspiracy in itself.
Well, yeah, but that's where the Brad Geyer, he's like, you know, he's like my buddy cop, buddy mm-hmm. lawyer. I like right. him a lot, but he's trying to prove things, and I think you'll never be able to prove it.
Well,
I don't know any of that.
Let's go over. I'm a little confused right now. So what is the actual case again? Is it civil or criminal? Where I'm going to kind of just sort of
it's criminal. Well, I mean, there's both
the criminal case.
There's the criminal prosecution, and then there's all this civil stuff, which is just basically there to try to sink the, you know, to make it impossible for the criminal case to get a fair hearing.
Okay, so the criminal case is against Stuart Rhodes, and who is it now? Or who are the defendants?
Everybody.
Here? Everybody.
It's
so all the
Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers.
So everybody in the D.C. gulag right now that was there in the Capitol, it's one case for
yeah,
all
much.
Of them? Okay, so
no,
they're all one case.
There's like about seven different civil cases that are slightly different. And
okay.
as I said when it happened, it won't be the last one. They're just you know, running it through the mimeograph machine, the old and making more and more copies of the same lawsuit.
Huh. And so the judge ruled that they're all guilty. Did he do this in writing, or how is?
Yeah,
this?
In his memorandum of opinion denying the motion
okay.
to dismiss, he described
what happened. Okay. Oh,
he didn't say. He gave the introductory context. He didn't say what they normally do. What they would normally do is say, here's what is alleged. Now, the lawyers reading it know that.
Okay.
But the problem is that potential jurors don't know that.
Mm, yeah.
And the media is reporting on it as if, you know, he's already found Trump guilty.
It's that subliminal
message.
Of
an insurrection.
That people like me, you know, that aren't educated would assume to be what he's saying.
And he knows better.
Mm.
He's been there as a judge forever.
Mm. Wow.
So he knows that if he's sloppy on that, it will affect things. So the thing is, the Insurrection Act is, you know, it's passed in, what was it, 1807? And remember, we had this thing called Shay's Rebellion, remember?
Mm-hmm.
It says that the president, by using the militia or the armed forces or both, or by any other means, shall take such measures as he, and the interesting thing, he says, shall take such measures as he considers necessary, which those
mm-hmm.
are criteria. Those aren't open-ended opinions. Those are standards that can be applied, you know, as a legal obligation. To suppress in a state any insurrection, domestic violence, unlawful combination, or conspiracy if it, one, so it hinders the execution of the laws of that state and of the United States within the state, that any part or class of his people is deprived of a right, privilege, immunity, or protection named in the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. So Antifa, yes. The riots of 2020, you know, Trump talked about this, but he didn't do it. And now there's part two, and obstructs the execution of the laws in the United States or impedes the course of justice. Like one of the things is that Judge Maida determined that when Trump gave that speech, he was acting as a personal campaigner, not as president, because he doesn't have a role in the election thing. Well, yes, he does. Here it is, right here. And they're going through these different things. So,
well, I got a question for
you. This would not give him. I doubt that he could go and see, because everyone's all upset that he was going to, here's the outrageous thing that drives me crazy. Someone wrote a memo. Who? I don't know. We don't know. Why did they write the memo? We don't know. They sent the memo. Did Trump ever see it? We don't know. Did anybody ever see it? We don't know. And yet it's this huge scandal that somebody wrote a memo to have the military seize the voting machines. And, Trump's a dictator because somebody wrote a memo. And, I debated with idiots online, and they say, well, people don't just write memos without being asked. Oh, hell, they do. I wrote lots of them when I was in the government that nobody asked me to write.
Yeah.
I said, hey, we should do this. You should do that. I've sent things from all over the place. There's another thing like that, some petition or some PowerPoint that somebody sent. And, somebody just wrote a PowerPoint and sent it in. I've done that many times. Like, nobody reads it, but they... So he wrote this memo that he's going to seize the voting machines. Well, this is after the election,
yeah.
Right? If he was going to seize the voting machines before the election, okay, maybe. But the election's already been held. Let's suppose he had done that. He had used the Insurrection Act, I don't know if it would really apply, to seize the voting machines after the count, just to verify. What's wrong with that? I think anyone who's honest would say, hell yeah, seize the voting machines, make sure that they weren't, and especially because you have the possibility of hacking by a foreign power. So the president, if the president wants to seize the voting machines and make sure they weren't hacked by China, then what's wrong with that?
It's preserving a crime scene. It's preserving evidence.
Yeah.
But my question, though, is the judge issuing this opinion using the evidence that he chooses to use? Is that a way to limit the evidence that you think will be permissible in the trial to what he's already discussed?
We can try, what I would say is there's no evidence.
Okay.
There has been not a single witness sworn in. There's been not a single piece of paper admitted into evidence. He's going on the news.
Does this go to judicial
misconduct,
is this for a judicial misconduct, or do you think you can? Is this an appeal thing, or you think you can do it on the case itself? So it hasn't been dismissed, but you think you can still, win the case without appeals and all the other things?
It would be a motion for recusal that he's already made up his mind. He's declared
that's a good idea.
What he thinks happened.
Mm-hmm.
He'll probably say, "I meant to say that." I was just meaning to say that's what the allegations say. He's written thousands of these things. He knows better.
Can you put that in our legal
group? Opening.
I'd be curious to read it myself, if you can put his opinion in the legal group, our Action Radio legal group page. It'd be interesting to see what this is.
I'm not sure how to upload a document like that, but I can send it to you.
Okay, we'll figure it out later. Yeah. Anyway, we've only got a couple minutes left. I want to make sure that we talk about tomorrow. So, do you have any questions about talking to folks? You can talk to One American News, Newsmax, Fox, anybody you want to. We need the bigger folks. But do you know any of the reporters from One American News? Have you watched them at all or no?
Not really. No.
How about Newsmax? Are you familiar with any of the reporters, the big people, the news reporters, anchors at Newsmax?
No. Well, maybe just Kara Castanova.
Don't know who that is.
Kara Castanova is a panelist who sometimes she writes for the Gateway Pundit, and she sometimes appears on Newsmax. And I know Chris Carter from Real America News.
Real America News? I'm not familiar with that one. What's Real America News?
Yeah, it's another channel that gets on some TV systems and they're good. And they're growing.
Okay. Hey, listen, you can introduce me to somebody new.
Real America's Voice. Excuse me.
Okay, Real America's Voice. Yeah, go talk to them. If you can get them on the show tomorrow, great. I mean, interrupt any report I have. We're going to be talking gun stuff, and Derek's off for financial stuff. So, yeah, anybody you can get that you think can help us onto the show and explain what's going on, I'll see if I can get the website fixed before then. Real America News?
Yeah, Real America's Voice.
America's Voice. Okay.
You can watch it online. I'm going to. That's how I watch
it. It's online. It's not a TV thing.
It is both, but you can watch it like on their website.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, have fun. And I can't wait to hear Jonathan Mosley live from CPAC. I got to get like a theme for you guys. So feel free to act like real journalists or like fake journalists. Just if you want to come on, this is Jonathan Mosley, direct from CPAC for Action Radio. You know, I mean, let's have some fun with it. Let's do some taglines. Cindy, you can do the same thing.
All right, thanks.
Cindy Cagle, medical freedom reporter, on the road with the convoy.
I cannot say that with a straight face.
Oh, well, then laugh through it. I don't care. All right. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Bianchi. Thank you, Cindy. We will.
Thanks,
we'll
everyone. Have a good week.
Okay, bye.
With our live reporters checking in. And this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio, anchoring the show, you know, here in Milton, Florida, on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. All right, all kidding aside, we've had an incredible day. I'm mentally exhausted by all the stuff we went through. It's been quite fascinating. And so we'll do it again tomorrow. It's 6 o'clock Central and 7 Eastern and 5 Mountain and 4 Pacific. And we are here at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction if you want to contribute to us. We also have a givesendgo.com account at givesendgo.com/actionradio. My Write Your Laws website, I got to fix it. That's my next call right after the show now, is to figure out what the you know what happened to our beloved writeyourlaws.com. Talk to you tomorrow.